and welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Thank you very much.
How's it going?
It's good. It's Michigan good.
All right, Michigan good. Well, if this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search for Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Of course, we're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Just search at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N. We love feedback.
We do.
So you can leave us feedback. You can leave us a 5-star review. Well, you can leave us any star review, but if you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it here on the air. You can leave that on iTunes or Stitcher. You can also email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And right now, you can leave us a voicemail. And you can call 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the show. And we give a shout out, as always, to the black guy who tips Rod and Karen for those feedback rules. And today we have as a guest today the queen herself, Karen, from the black guy who tips, will be on the show. So we're really excited about that. She'll be on a little bit later. But what's going on with you?
I was thinking, could we get mom to give a voicemail? I'd love to hear mom's voicemail.
Which mom?
Val, your mom.
Oh, my mom. Yeah. Sure. I'll prompt her.
That'd be good. I want the people to hear mom.
Good Lord. They've heard her before. You can listen to her dispatch from the Blue Room.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about feedback and customer, you know, like reviews and service. And I had two kind of interesting customer service interactions. The belt I bought for our friend Chad.
Yeah.
And that was my second purchase from this company. I'll name Beltology. They sent me a handwritten note from the CEO, the chief beltologist, thanking me for my order. If there was anything at all I needed, here's his phone number and email. I was kind of impressed. Like, it wasn't in the box. It was a separate, like a week after I bought everything, handwritten note. Then the stuff I bought to clean the TV screen from Amazon?
Yeah.
I bought it because on Amazon, you like search for this product and there's a bunch of different ones. And this one had like all 5-star reviews and like thousands of them. I was like, well, that's got to be a pretty good product, right?
Yeah.
So I got it. And kudos, the product works great. I don't remember the name of it. I think it was Altura cleaning product. But in the box came again a handwritten note from the CEO responsible for customer. And he goes, I'm in charge of customer satisfaction. And if there's any reason you cannot leave a 5-star review on Amazon, contact me immediately and we'll rectify it, including up to a full refund for the product.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, not only like, do we want a 5-star review, but if you can't give us a 5-star review, let me know why and we'll take care of it.
Wow.
It was and they had like 8,000 5-star reviews.
Well, I know, no kidding. Yeah, no kidding. Definitely get you some 5-star reviews. For
and it was, I thought, hey, you know what? Good on them.
Well, let's hope it works and you can leave a 5-star review.
Yeah. Well, and then so, I don't know if marketing, customer service, kind of all intertwined. We're in Grand Rapids, and I've heard this now twice. It's a heavily churched area.
Yeah.
As in a verb.
A lot of churches per capita around here.
Just, I've never heard churched.
There's one like down the street.
Oh, they're all over the place.
They're everywhere.
So I got a piece of mail, and it says, this piece of mail could change your life forever.
Ooh.
I thought, wow.
That sounds good.
For a postcard. That's impressive. Hey. And then it's like, well, that's actually a little ridiculous. Mail can't change your life, but we're excited to introduce you to something new that can. The new chapel. We're a church full of real people living in a real world, serving a real God.
Wait a second. What happened to the old chapel, though?
I don't know. And this new
gentrification.
It's funny. They call it the new chapel, and it meets at the North Point High School. So it's not even a chapel.
Oh, Lord.
In the gym. But it's a church, and they believe the church should be enjoyable and create a casual, comfortable environment and grab a cup of coffee.
This means you can wear jeans.
I think so.
But it's going to be the same shit as every other church.
I just thought, like, Jesus. Jesus. We moved to Grand Rapids, which is heavily church, kind of like Midwest Bible Belt. And we get, like, I've never got church telemarketing.
Wasn't it our first mail?
Yeah, I was saying the second piece of mail we ever got was fucking. And I'm sure they buy the, like, welcome wagon list. Like, oh, they just moved in.
Totally.
Send them the postcard. It'll change their life.
Insanity.
So, yeah. Church. When we were in Philadelphia, we'd see billboards and marketing for hospitals. And I saw the same thing. Like, why do you got to market a hospital?
Yeah,
why do you
got
to market
strange.
A church?
Like, you that's go to weird. The hospital that you're either your doctor's at or that you're closest to if you need a hospital. I never understand. I guess if you're getting, like, cancer treatment, you can pick. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know why.
I always feel like all that stuff is referrals. So it's weird to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
What else is going on? I mean, I've just been crazy busy personally.
I hear you. Well, and some of the shit we've both been busy with in multiple different circles is faux outrage.
Oh, God.
It's just
outrage.
Yeah, man. The faux outrage over Black Lives Matter stirred up by Fox News.
Oh, and my God.
When is it going to be labeled a terrorist organization? You know, it's just
like, if they could be labeled news, though.
Yeah, exactly. I remember Obama didn't at the press correspondence dinner.
Fox.
Well, so there was a group, Beverly Church, a UU church, yeah. Our Faith, in mm-hmm. Chicago.
Beverly Unitarian.
And they didn't even put up a banner. It was one of those, what do you call it, like a sidewalk?
Like electronic signs.
Yeah, but like a sidewalk confessional preacher type deal where you change the sign on a rotating basis.
Right.
And they put up Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And a lot of our faith churches that have been hanging Black Lives Matter banners have been getting, people are going around taking pictures, putting up the name of the church, the address in, I assume, like cop talk blogs.
No, not and, assume. It's been, yeah, on these cop talk message boards.
So, you know, relatives and wives and other people that are, you know, related to law enforcement are coming in and just being really shitty. Like, this is, you know, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group and they're murdering and blah, blah, blah. So Beverly Church put the electronic sign up, got, you know, criticism from the white community, not even members of their church.
No, right? No member.
Not UU, not even UU faith
not
individuals.
Even people in the community. I want to be clear on that.
Yeah, just totally.
People from Texas.
Exactly.
People from all racist. That's so, where they've gotten responses from.
The faux outrage these racists created ended up fucking having Beverly acquiesce.
Yeah.
They not only took down the sign, but they made some sort of like apology and thanking the concerned citizens and police that keep them safe. And they referenced a message on their voicemail that said, you know, what would a police officer think? And it's like, what the fuck is every black person going to think when you take this shit down now?
Yeah.
I just, and I'm struggling with our faith and kind of where we stand and the UUA. And, I hope that they have this open forum Sunday and hope that we get to go and help them see the light that standing on the side of love and our first principle means Black Lives Matter, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I've been dealing with faux outrage all over. I sent an email for work, and I don't want to, like, divulge my job, but I work with a segment of people that are, let's just say, persnickety.
That's
very,
a good word.
They're very particular. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, imagine, like, editors and proofreaders and shit. Like, they're really particular. And the marketing communication was from a client, and it had some language that you could have interpreted, like, the one word private was like, what do you mean by private, you know? And, of course, people assumed this, and they went that way, and they went all over the place. And it was like one person has this faux outrage, and then 20 other people that didn't even see the marketing communication interpret and respond to the first faux outrage, and then it, like, balloons into this bullshit. And it was just, I mean, people are using words like egregious and horrible. And I was like, the fuck? It was a contest.
Right.
Like, don't participate in the contest. Like,
yeah, it's pretty easy.
I get a message that says some bullshit I don't like. It's like, oh, I click. You know, I never even fucking take the time to. And it was like multiple groups, multiple support requests. I'm going to call, you know, Drew's company right now and I'm going to complain about it. It's like, fucking A. So just faux outrage all over the place this week. Bugging me.
It's been everywhere for sure. Well, we did get a voicemail, though.
Oh, we did. I was going to say, speaking of bugs, you've been having some issues with
the
bugs.
Don't talk about the bugs since you couldn't even kill a goddamn spider in here today.
And I don't know if it's Michigan, if it's this house, but there's a little more bug intrusion than we're used to.
Yeah, I don't like the bug situation, but whatever. So this message comes from another Leslie out there. She says, I love your show. Laughing so hard listening to this list. She'd like the 10 words that white people killed.
Oh, yeah, we done ruined it.
I'm on my way to line dancing class they teach at the YMCA. The class is huge. We have often been celebrated for being the largest attended class there, up to 116 people sometimes. The teacher, Natasha, is black, as are me and my husband, but in this class, we are the minority. It's largely populated by mostly white, Spanish, Asian, and black. It's the funniest thing to turn while doing the wobble and seeing them all knees, elbows, and little rhythm.
Little rhythm.
Surprisingly, when we first started attending, they offered to help me learn the steps to the songs I did know. I'm 50 years old and pretty decent physical condition and from Philly. Being black and from Philly, you know I got rhythm. But those old ladies were so cute, I let them anyway. The age range of the class may be from 20s to 90s. Sometimes while dancing around the room, I wish our world could see this. Everybody together helping each other to do something as simple as dance. It's a great stress reliever. Then the class ends and we leave the gym to go back to the rest of racist society. But for that 1 hour of dancing around, it's a beautiful thing. Thank you, too, for the laughs and for Before You Move to Taste of Philadelphia. P.S. Don't tell them about John. They'll steal that, too.
They'll ruin that, too. I'm white, and I'm on fast on my way to ruining the John.
Yeah, she says, I think they may have already stole it. Check out this picture from over the Speedway. And this is in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay.
And it's an ad that's for Philly, my Philly I think my philly.com or visit philly.com.
Wait, it's in Florida?
Yeah, it's like come to Philly. I think that's what it says.
Why in Florida?
I don't know. Anyways, it says there's no John like home is the tagline.
That seems like a waste of the Convention Visitor Bureau money from, like, I know that they had all these issues with the convention center. Like, the governor took control away from the mayor in Philadelphia, but now they're spending money in Florida?
Yeah,
that seems weird.
I guess so, I guess.
I mean, if you're going to, like, market in Florida, but come for the cheesesteaks, baby.
Right.
Something other.
Something other than that.
You know, I don't have it up, but you were reading me your Facebook, I guess, clapbacks on some of these races. You were having fun.
Well, I went to get my hair done. So let's preface it with that. I really don't engage with trolls, like, generally speaking, because it's stupid. But I was sitting in the salon. I didn't have anything to do. I wasn't really reading anything, and I was just doing mindless stuff. So I decided to troll back a bunch of these people that were commenting on the Beverly Unitarian Church page. It was pretty funny. They were getting so frustrated with me.
Would you read? Just read the one exchange you had that you read to me. I thought it was just brilliant.
Oh, I don't know. I have to like pull it up and stuff. But basically, they would say something like, "This is a racist church," and I literally posted the same thing on like 7 people. It was just like, "Are you a member of this church? Have you been to this church? Do you know anything about this church community and this faith?" And invariably, they'd write some horrendous shit back, like, "I don't need to know anything except for that they're horrible terrorist people." Right. You know, like, well,
you had an exchange of about 20 messages with this one woman, and right away she's like, "No, I don't belong to this church. No, I don't live in this community." And blah blah blah. And you're like, "Okay, good. So that completely invalidates your review. Thanks." And she kept coming back with more bullshit.
And I kept going,
"But your review's still invalid."
I said, "Geez, I already said thanks, lady. What do you want?" It was really funny, but whatever.
You should have had it up. I want to read it. Maybe the next episode. I put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I will.
Make a screen cap.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's grab Karen and let's get into it with her.
Let's do it. Call her up. Home.
Hello.
Hey,
Karen.
How are you two doing?
We are doing so good. So good to hear from you. All right, we are pleased to welcome to the show.
Thrilled.
The queen of the black podcasters herself, Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips. What's going on, Karen?
How y'all doing out there?
Oh, my gosh.
Better now that you're here.
Now that you're here, we were looking forward to this since we scheduled it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I had a blast last time on the show, so we're thrilled that you're coming back.
Yes. For those who do not know Karen, I don't know how you could because that's impossible, but whatever. If you don't, she is 10-star Karen from the Black Girl Who Tips podcast, which she does 5 days a week plus some with her wonderful husband, Rod. And you can find them at theblackguywhotips.com. And you can find her on Twitter at say.dat again. And truthfully, we talk all the time. I mean, we mention your show almost every episode because we do use the patented Black Guy Who Tips feedback rules here on the Interracial John. And we talk about the tree that you guys have put together of podcasts that started because of your podcast. I mean, what do you guys, do you talk about that at all, the two of you? Like, how do you feel about all of that?
I mean, we do talk about it, but it's just one of those things where some people don't even realize the foundation that we laid. And it's not that we're better than anybody else or anything. It's just for the fact that we grind, we put in the work, we focus on making our product better, and people will recognize and they will realize that. And I think especially when it comes to podcasting has been predominantly white. Mm-hmm. And so white people have been doing a lot of the things that black people are now kind of stepping into as far as making money, you know, trying to make premium content and things like that. And I think that we talk about how people do some of the things that we do, and some people give us credit, some people don't. We don't take it personal. Because it's like your grandma, you know, your grandma do a lot of shit and she does these things in your life. But, you know, as the generations move on, people forget about grandma.
Well, we don't forget here at the Interracial John. And I just know, like, whenever we have guests on, we always talk about how you guys really paved the way for so many of us. And we just always make that correlation, you know, in football where they have the, like, coaching trees where, you know, somebody coached way back when and then all of their assistants went on to be head coaches and so on and so forth. And, like, that's what the Black Guy Who Tips is for us as a community. So, hey, thank you guys for that. It's so awesome. But in addition to that, I just wanted to talk to you about, you know, I listened to you on Insanity Check last weekend.
Yes.
Talking a little bit. Great show, by the way. I mean, I love Chris, but you guys together is just magical. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome. But I heard you guys talking about the decision to not have children.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew and I are child-free by choice as well. And it's an interesting thing. You know, you guys touched a little bit on that jealousy angle that comes into your life a little bit when you start to get, I would say, north of like 35 is where I felt the shift happen. Because I feel like before that, people thought, oh, they'll change their mind or kind of they were okay with it. But once you get past that point, it's really like, yeah, they really not doing this.
Right.
The conversation shifts.
And I hope my mom isn't listening to this exact episode, but I'll be real. I feel like sometimes she doesn't say it in this exact way, but she's older. She came from an era where getting married, having kids, really, you know, like that wasn't like a choice. It was just like the thing you did. Like if she didn't want to get married, didn't want to have kids, was like, quote unquote, spinster, it would have been weird for her in the, you know, whenever she was, you know, getting married, like 1950 something. But I feel like sometimes the way she kind of engages with some of the decisions that we make, it comes off a little bit like, again, not jealous, that's maybe the wrong word, but it envy, because she didn't have that. We have made a choice not to have kids, and the choice not to have kids has opened up the opportunity to take vacations and do things that maybe she would have wanted to do.
Right, and also, this is just my personal opinion, I also think that for a lot of people, particularly women, being a mother is a part of womanhood. Like, you are not a quote unquote woman. You are not whole unless you just know the experience of and understand the experience of having a child.
Right.
And it's a club, which I completely understand that, but it does not mean everybody wants to be a part of the club. Mm-hmm. Just because my body can reproduce, I have the right and I have the choice to choose not to join that club. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of women are very judgmental of women that choose not to have children, because for most people, having children was something that they, for some people, they've always had the desire. I want to be a mother.
Right.
For others, it happened and they just had to deal with it. It wasn't planned or anything like that. Most children aren't planned. So it's one of the things where it happened and they consciously made the choice to keep that child and birth that child. Well, you have to deal with the responsibilities of that. And when they realize how much work it is, how demanding it is, how time consuming it is, how less your life is about you and more of your life is about your child, that people begin to realize that, hey, this might not been a choice that I would have made if I would have known those things now. Because like I said on the show, I have talked to people that are grown, grandmothers, older people, people that have, you know, children and things like that. And some of them will tell you, I love my children. I love my children with all my heart. But if I had to do it again, I would not. If I knew what I knew then that I know now, I would not. But that's the thing, that when you start talking about that, everybody wants to shame you and make you feel bad when women, because there are a lot of women out there that are hurt, don't know how to deal with children, mentally can't mentally can't cope, because the thing about having children is that it affects everybody's life. Everybody that's directly involved with that woman's life, but more directly it affects that woman. And people just think, well, you can birth the child and you just deal with the aftermath. But for some people, the aftermath is not a good thing, because you constantly see on the radio, news, the TV about how a mama snapped and killed the children and pushed the child, you know, pushed a car in the river and just crazy stuff. And a lot of times they maybe should have not had that child. Mm. And when you say that, people think that there's something wrong with you for saying that maybe you should not have made the choice to have a child.
For real. Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead.
No, and I think for me, that's a part of the woman's right and the woman's choice. And everybody, put it this, everybody wants to make a choice for your vagina but you. Mm. And it's like everybody can tell you what you can put in it, what you can put out of it, what to do with it. But when you start saying, hey, this is what I want to do with it, everybody all of a sudden has problems and issues. How dare you tell me that you want to have an abortion? How dare you tell me that you want to be, you know, a mother and stay at home and not work? How dare you tell me, you know, that you want to be a porn star? How dare you tell me this? And people do not know how to deal with people with our generation. Honestly, I think our generation is a very different generation, a very peculiar generation, because the reason why I said it is because a lot of our generation – is to the age now. Like, people are at their 30s and 40s are like, fuck this 9-to-5 everyday shit. I'm not dealing with this no more. I'm going to start my own job. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. I'm going to become an entrepreneur. Yep. I'm a, you know, it's almost like our generation is seeking happiness. Yeah. And happiness is not tied up in your job, because a lot of older generation was taught that your worth is in your job. Mm. And that's why a lot of them go crazy when they lose their jobs or get fired, because their whole life they've been told that your worth and your womanhood or your manhood or everything about your life is your job. And when that job's gone, who are you? You're worthless.
Right.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people that have all these mental breakdowns, jump off bridges, don't know how to deal with it, because, you know, they've been fed this false thing, because at the end of the day, most companies are not people, so they don't care about you as an individual. They don't care about your happiness, your well-being. They don't care about you being able to go home as a mother and take care of your child. Most jobs have terrible maternity leave, and even if a father wants to do maternity leave, most jobs will laugh in your face. Now they have laws to say that, hey, if a father decides that he wants to take off, he can now with the Family Leave Act.
Right.
But they had to make that a law, because if you had a man that actually wanted to be in his child's life, a good man, regardless of if he was the woman or not, he didn't have a choice.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, like, I look at a lot of those things, and for me, when it comes to children, I look at people who have children, and I look at how they respond. I look at how to interact. I look at a lot of those things, and I realize it is a lot of goddamn work. It is a lot of work. It is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week. You get no time off. You get no sick pay. Nope. You get no PTO time. It is a constant job. You will forever be mommy or daddy, and even if one of you should pass, you will still forever hold that position.
Yeah, for sure.
What you just said about two of the things, the work and the children, I think the assumptive is, well, I'm going to have a job, and that job's going to be miserable, and I'm going to be miserable until I'm 65 and retire. Like, that's kind of okay, and not so much for our generation. And same with kids. And to the point you said, like, you know, this choice and whether to have kids or not kids. Someone listening, correct me if I'm wrong, the modern woman, the modern female Homo sapien, is the only mammal, maybe the only animal, maybe the only organism that can actively choose not to procreate. Only one on earth. So if you're of the rare, you know, you, Leslie, the rare few that get to make that choice, it would be, you know, foolhardy to not really evaluate that choice and think it through. And I don't know if a lot of people do. They just sort of like, oh, this is the job, and I've had it for 10 years, and I'm going to stick it out because I hate it. And, well, I've, you know, got married, and it's been a couple of years, and, oh, I guess we'll just have kids. Or maybe even not that. Maybe it's not that we wanted or didn't want to have kids, but we weren't using birth control. What do you think's going to happen, you know? And then you have people, like you said, that, well, I might have done it differently. Well, you know, it was great, but.
Well, I also think that there's a little bit of, like, you know, something else that doesn't get said a lot is, like, some of us, our moms were not that great. Our parents weren't that great.
Right.
Like, they shouldn't have had kids. Like, there's a bit of that where you have to, like, come to terms with that fact and, like, reconcile the fact. And I think if more people did that, they would really look at their choice to have a child or not very differently. But there's this idea, it's like, oh, you know, we don't talk about that shitty stuff my mom did to me because I love my mom. And you can have both of those things be the case.
Boy, did your mom do a number on you.
I'm not talking about my mom specifically.
No, I'm making sure.
But I'm just saying, generally speaking, though, you know, we have scars that our parents inflict upon us, and we don't talk about them. And that leads to this, like, narrative that parenthood is great, and everybody has a great relationship with their parents, when that is, like, almost nobody I know has that scenario in their lives. It doesn't work that way.
My dad was a complete shit. He should not have had kids. A narcissistic, alcoholic asshole that was a way of our life for 30 years. Shouldn't have had kids.
Right. But I will say that I think we do have children, though, Karen. You know, our podcasts are our kids.
Right. And I try to explain that to people. A lot of people are like, well, how can y'all do, you know, 40-hour week podcasts and, you know, do 40 hours outside of that podcasting or other podcasts if we have a, you know, heavy rotation of things and guest spots? I said, because we have no children.
Right.
You know, the way you guys talk about your children and snap, you know, put your children on Pinterest and Facebook and Twitter, we do that with our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about our podcast. We put our podcast on Facebook, on Twitter. Like we do the same thing that you do with your physical child. So to us, like, the podcast is our baby. And back to some of the things y'all was talking about parenting, because a lot of people feel like because the choice was stripped from them, they feel like the choice should be stripped from you. And also, I feel as though a lot of sometimes parents are wrong, and it's hard for people to come to the understanding that just because they're your parents doesn't mean they were always right. Mm-hmm. And also, just because they're your parents, and as you get older, I had to come to the I had to get an understanding that I'm grown, damn it. And once I realized that I was grown, like really grown, because you could be out of the house and grown, but your parents still have some control over your life. They manipulate you. Yep. Parents can manipulate their children into doing things they don't want to do because they know of that parental love that they have, or that caring that they have that about their child, and the child being young and naive. That's another reason why a lot of people have children, because a lot of younger people fall into the trap of their parents pressuring them and living to the please their parents. But what I realized, I had to break that chain. I had to say, no. I'm living my life for me. I'm grown, a grown person who pays my own bills. So when I pay my own bills, I have the right to choose what I want to do with my life, because I have done what it takes to make that choice. And who are you? Because I think a lot of times, because of the bond that children and parents have, a lot of times people take parents' feelings into consideration. A lot of times you should not take their feelings into consideration. And that's very hard. That's a very hard hurdle to overcome, because I know it was hard for me to overcome, because as a child, you always seeking for your parents' approval, seeking for their acceptance, seeking for their love. This is what children do. And, you know, even as you get older, you still do that. Subconsciously sometimes don't even realize that that's what you're seeking. Don't even realize that the choices that you made in your life was to please somebody who at the end of the day really don't care about the consequences of the choice that you made.
Yep. Absolutely. Totally agree. And it's interesting just seeing all those dynamics play out, because I do see that all the time. And I will say thank you guys also for starting the Facebook group. It's been great being in there with all the rest of the TBGWT nation, because we always have so much fun in the chat rooms. But I know, like me, I try to make the live shows as much as I can, because it's a really fun way to interact with everybody. And it's like a little, you know, student center in the chat room there, live talking with everybody. Sometimes we be talking about stuff y'all aren't even talking about. It's ridiculous in there.
Hey, and to me, I love the fact that when we podcast, we try our best to create a happy environment. We want people to come and enjoy us and enjoy the topics and talk about other things. And we like those environments, because we were podcast listeners first. So we've been in chat rooms where it's very negative.
Mm.
We've been, you know, around and seen, you know, podcasters attack people and send their people to attack. Like we've seen this. We knows what happens if you cultivate a negative audience.
Right.
Like, we've seen that. You can alienate a lot of good people, because they're like, hey, I'm not down with this. And we've seen people get bullied out of chat rooms, like literally bullied out of chat rooms. Wow. We've seen, you know, those things happen. And we were determined that that was stuff we were not going to deal with, and we were not going to put up with. You know, that's one reason why we don't deal with trolls. And the thing about trolls is that a lot of people, if you don't interact with trolls a lot, you don't even really understand you're being trolled.
Right. They're sneaky. They're very sneaky.
Right. But because we've seen it over and over again, and Roger more so than me, because, you know, he's been on message boards. See, I wasn't a message board person, but, you know, he's been in those areas. So he knows the techniques and the tactics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when we do things, you have people who are like, well, y'all just being harsh. No. You were going to spend another 3 days with this person. We was like, no, we're going to nip this in the bud so the party can go on. We're not going to allow them to take our fun away because they want to be an ass.
Mm. Right.
I'm sorry, y'all. I got to call an audible. I don't know if you could tell. I got up because our doorbell rang. I'm like, oh, fucking doorbell rang. All right, whatever.
Now, let me tell you, we lived in New Jersey for 10 goddamn years, and nobody ever rang our doorbell.
Ever. No, in fact, literally, someone did ring our doorbell about the same time after we moved in. Remember the neighbor in New Jersey that rang our doorbell? Was like, oh, I got to tell you, don't leave your garage open.
Oh, yeah.
This person's a heroin addict, right, and the cops don't know they're here. Yeah. So our local fucking nosy neighbor just rang our doorbell, gave me her card. Her name's Sally, and she wanted to tell me that, so we had this, so we're getting all kinds of shit done at the house, including a roof, and there's a roofing crew here, and there's a dumpster and a fucking truck and pallets of fucking shingles and wood. Like, it's a complete tear down on a brand new roof. Like, it's a lot of shit. And I had a mobile groomer because we don't have time and energy and effort to, you know, take our dogs, and they stink because it hasn't been bathed in months. So they come with like a Suds and Duds van, and they plug shit in, and they ring the doorbell, and they wash your dog. So I had her park in front of my driveway, but blocking the roofer's van in. And normally shouldn't be a problem. Roofer didn't move his van for, you know, the whole 6 hours they were here yesterday and the day before. But as they're doing the roof, they tore up some bits, and they said, oh, we need to get some wood. We got to replace some of the planks. So we got to move the truck. And he rings my doorbell and says, hey, your dog groomer's blocking me in. We need to move the truck. I said, oh, okay, no problem. Like, hey, Pat, you know, we're blocking in. Let me see if we can't, you know. And I was even going to have the roofer drive over the lawn the other way, like, so Pat didn't have to move her truck. She ended up unplugging, backing up 10 feet, letting the roofer go. And then she pulled her van back in. So nosy neighbor Sally rang the doorbell to tell me that she witnessed something, and she doesn't know if she wanted to tell me, but thought it important I should know. And, well, you have a mobile groomer, and you have this roofer, and there was an exchange, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I didn't quite know what it was, and I thought maybe it might have been a little rude. Well, and let me just be clear. The roofers are Mexican, and this fucking and my groomer is a white woman, right? So God, Lord, protect the white women. And I guarantee you there was nothing nefarious whatsoever.
Of course there wasn't.
This Mexican was looking at this dog groomer, and he speaks, you know, English, but with an accent, and, you know, probably half the crew doesn't, and you know what I mean? So anyway, this is like the beginning of it. She fucking witnessed this exchange, drove around to check again a second time to make sure everything was okay, wrote down the number of the dog groomer, called the dog groomer,
what?
And said, you know, was something weird? Is what's going on? The dog groomer's like, well, you should talk to the homeowner. You know, like, fuck, do I care? Like, God. And the dog groomer, Pat, said nothing to me. Nothing,
what the
like,
fuck
nothing
is
about
wrong
they were
with
rude.
These people?
It's not done yet, babe. I'm not done. She then went to, of an odd coincidence, my next door neighbor, like, smack right next door, we share, like, you know, a side lawn. They're also getting their roof done, different roofing company. Said roofing company's white dudes. She asks the neighbor's roofing company, hey, there was a dog groomer here earlier, and there's the roofing company, and, you know, did you witness anything? Was it weird? Was it just a strange observation? Fucking for real. Felt the need to come and ring my doorbell and bend my ear for 15 minutes because the Mexicans on my roof, yo, maybe, possibly, looked sideways at the fucking white.
Dude.
And they were both contractors that I hired.
These white people
fuck
are
here.
Ridiculous here in Michigan.
Like, this is my neighbor? Good Lord.
Well, the other neighbor, like, made some nefarious, like, he should have moved out of this neighborhood before all the black people started moving
in. And I'll give you the quote verbatim. He said, you know, like, oh, yeah, we've been living here 30 years. Should have moved a while ago. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. What do you...
Yeah, when we put our Black Lives Matter sign up, we just gonna get real interesting up in her. Anyways.
Sorry, that was crazy.
It's gonna be real interesting. Well, let's get into some news so we can talk with Karen about some other stuff.
For real.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
Am I doing what's the news segment?
Yeah, that's you, babe.
Oh, Colorado. So Colorado's smoking so much weed. They've collected so much tax that they're actually considering giving a rebate. They've got $30 million in a surplus.
They're giving a rebate to people?
Yeah. So the Colorado Marijuana Experiment was designed to raise revenue for the state and its schools. But the state law, because they have a law, may put some of the tax money directly back into residents' pockets, causing a little bit of a headache. The state constitution limits how much tax money the state can take in before it has to give some back. So at some point, the constitution of Colorado is like, yo, you can't collect so much money. And if you collect so much money, bitch, give us
I
back
think
some.
Every state has that, but most states don't have, like, oil reserves.
Yeah, Alaska's like one Alaska, of them. Right. Correct. Well,
now,
hey.
But now
green gold
is being sold in Colorado. Yeah. See, this is what, Karen, don't you think everybody should just fucking legalize pot? This is craziness.
It is. And it was something when they first passed that law, I was like, hey, remember I talked about it, I was like, everybody's going to look at them and they're going to see how much fucking money they're making.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, I feel like this. Even with the legalization, it's still racist. Because as long as there was no money to be made, states and shit did not care. And
nope. You
rich at brown people.
Yep.
Second, if there's money to be made, laws change. White folks come in, buy up all the property and all that shit to make that money.
Absolutely.
Now, the thing is that I feel as though now, since it's legal, everybody that you have arrested for petty crimes else should be let out of jail now, because now they would not be arrested.
There's people in Colorado jails right now that were arrested for pot offenses. The amount they collected was $50 million in taxes
in a year,
and their population's 5 million, like a little over 5 million.
Yo.
That's $10 every man, woman, and child. And I don't think everyone smokes. So say it's like a quarter of people smokes. That's $40 per person in taxes that they paid for pot. And I'm with you. I think it should be legalized everywhere. And I think Michigan's going to be hopefully putting it on a referendum or a constitutional amendment?
Yeah, I think it's going to be referendum on next year's ballot. So it should be interesting to see if it gets on the ballot and then what happens.
But what's the referendum? They're trying to go the Washington, D.C. route, the Colorado route?
I don't know which route they're going. I think it's going to be a little bit weird, because I still think they're going to leave that counties can get to opt in or opt out of it type of clause in. So I don't know.
I don't wish they wouldn't do that. If everybody votes on it and bulk of the people say yay, it should be yay. You know, it's like, because when you let individuality come in, you mean to tell me I can't smoke weed because some fucking tightwad who don't know anything about me decides no?
Mm-hmm. You know, they have dry counties.
Well, I think it's like... Yeah, but they're few and far between.
They are.
And it's like, oh, you can just bring your beer into the restaurants there. It's not like we don't allow that shit in our borders, which is how they're are tracking this.
I know Michigan could use that $50 million for schools.
For sure. And beyond that, I think it's like twofold. We think, if you think about the money that's made off of the taxation, and then the second part of it is the money you're not spending on prosecuting and arresting and jailing people for these offenses. So not only do you get the money that's coming in, you also aren't spending this bullshit money on things you don't even need to be spending it on. I think the last time I looked at marijuana inmates cost $1 billion a year in U.S. prisons. $1 billion. So it's a win-win-win. And I do agree with you that it's incredibly racist, like everything else in this country. It's built on supremacy. And supremacy would dictate that something that black and brown people are being locked up for in droves, now that it's legal, white people are able to leverage their historical wealth and higher status in life to make additional money. So... Right. I do agree with that, but I do think it's time to just stop filling our jails with people for pot offenses. It's just insanity at this point.
I take it further. Why do we at all police, like, I don't want to say behaviors, but like shit you do for yourself to yourself? You know what I'm saying? Like just, you know, consumption of, I'm not saying all drugs, but it's like just people are going to, you can't through criminal punishment affect change in like social behavior, like taking drugs, having sex. It just doesn't work.
Especially when most people that are arrested, especially for pot and a lot of drug offenses, it's not on the selling end of things. It's people using drugs. Right. That is not the point that you need to, if your goal is to stop drug use, that's not the, jailing people using drugs is not the way to do that. The war on drugs has taught us that, if nothing else. So that's the exact opposite of something that's going to work. So it
doesn't work.
It just doesn't work.
Correct. And honestly, the thing about people passing these laws, if they really want to be effective, jobs need to stop testing for marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like if you really wanted to get to the fact where more people would actually attempt to do it, or where people wouldn't lose their jobs, marijuana should be marked off the list. Nobody employed should be testing for fucking marijuana. It's, but like I said, if the state says that people can use it for recreational use, a lot of people still can't smoke, because the second they ask for a pee test, you will fail.
Yeah.
So I think that if you really want to push it to its limits, you can say, okay, test for other shit, but marijuana, no, because we have the right to smoke it. I should not lose my job because I was smoking.
They just passed that in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, D.C., since they had decriminalized or actually legalized smoking.
Yeah, it was a half-assed version. You can't force someone to take a pee test until a job offer is made. So during the application, interview, can't do it. But if you're going to offer them a job, it's like, okay, now you got to pee in a cup.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't want to say it's the same fucking thing.
It isn't. I think that the idea is like putting them on a path to it. A lot of jobs have started where they don't test you for employment, but if you get an accident or anything like that happens on the job, and that's just to their benefit, because now they have an out to not cover whatever happened to you because, oh, he smoked weed 17 days ago.
And what you just said is exactly my issue with the testing modalities, the gas chromatic, everything you can do in terms of identifying a drug-taking individual, when it comes to weed, it's just totally fucked up. Like, weed, A, is not a, it's not aggressive. It doesn't make you a terrible employee. You're
well,
not
except, except if you're a black person, except in which case black, you get turned into a Hulk.
But the...
it is natural.
What would you... What would you rather hire? You own a business. Would you rather hire a raging alcoholic that sobered up for 18 hours before they took your pee test, a cokehead who managed to not do cocaine for about 48, 72 hours. That's how long it stays in your body. Any number of other illicit drugs that aren't really tested for acid, LSD, the ecstasy, MDMA, all that shit. They don't test for that. Would you rather have a heroin user that just happens to be clean now, or somebody who smoked a joint at a party 30 fucking days ago? What's the, why are those all equal? Right? Because those are the testing limits for coke and alcohol. All you got to do is wait fucking like 48 hours. Weed, it's fucking like, depending on your body makeup, chemistry, how much you smoke, you know, fat content, so on and so forth. It could be 30, 45 days, 6 weeks. That's just stupid that somebody that smoked a joint 6 weeks ago is deemed unemployable compared to somebody who is a raging alcoholic that managed to fucking not drink for 18 hours. Those are the equivalents. Are the equivalents. Right. The only way to test if someone's is drunk is if they go to the pee test drunk. Right. If they're literally drunk and pissing in a cup.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. That's a good
point.
That's
stupid as shit.
That's a really good point. Well, I wanted to talk about, and you and Arad actually talked about on your show yesterday, the case of the white lesbian couple that had the biracial baby due to an error in the sperm bank that mm-hmm. gave them the wrong sperm. And... So, as you guys reported, the case was thrown out of court that they had filed. She filed saying that the clerical error had caused her and her partner stress, pain, suffering, and medical expenses is what she said. She stated that she loves her daughter. She stated in her suit that she would grow up feeling like an outcast and that she and her partner have limited cultural competence around African-Americans. And she mentioned a bunch of other stuff, too, as well, like getting a haircut and anxiety. And when she envisions Peyton entering an all-white school, Peyton's a little girl's name. And they moved to, when she was pregnant, they moved to a white area to be close to her family. And the schools were better there. Surprise, surprise. And then now this problem is coming up because she has a bunch of racist people in her family, and the community is not very welcoming to her biracial daughter in this environment. So the case was thrown out, and they were originally seeking $50,000 in damages. And what the judge issued said to them is that they should have done a different suit. They should have sued for damages. Wasn't that it?
Negligence
is what they should have sued for, because that's what actually occurred, was that the sperm bank, which they definitely were negligent. They didn't do their job correctly.
There.
And that's the long and the short of it. But I think it's been interesting listening to people's reaction to the story. I've been watching the story really closely because I found it interesting, this idea that there's a cost to being black in this country, and the possibility of it being legally proven was very intriguing to me, because it kind of speaks a little bit to the case for reparations and what we deal with as black people in this country, and that somewhere in a court in this country that there would be a monetary number put on that. I was really interested to see.
That's why they threw that shit out.
I'm not surprised they threw it out, because God forbid they actually, a judge actually says that shit. Like
an actual black text.
You're black and this is what it costs you to be black. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine it? Oh my God. But it's been a lot of judgment to the moms for filing the lawsuit in the first place. So I thought that's been really interesting to watch as well. Where I think when I liken it to, for example, something happens in the delivery room and a child is not damaged, but a child has an issue that becomes a lifelong issue moving forward, whether it's like their hearing or whatever it is. And the doctors then sued for negligence as well. I don't think there's any shame attached to that kind of negligence lawsuit. But I see that with this family, it's definitely become a little bit more of a moral quandary as to questioning whether they love their child, whether they want their child. And so I found that interesting. What I know, I heard you and Rod talk about it, but just in case anybody on our show didn't listen to that episode, what were your initial thoughts on the case and then this development of the case being thrown out? Karen.
I think that they should have sued because they paid for a service.
Mm-hmm.
The service did not do what it was supposed to do.
Right.
You sued them for not providing your service. Your product was your child, mm-hmm. you know, and people don't want to look at it like that, but that's for real. The right. product Truth. Was your child. You just, it's like you go pay for a red velvet cake and they give you a lemon pound cake. You're going to be highly upset. You're going to demand your money back.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened. It was a transaction that was supposed to take place, and they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and that's what you sue on.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why they threw it out. I think they should have thrown it out. I think that, just my personal opinion, I think her whole, and Roger brought this up, when you're dealing with lawyers, speech and their talk, depending on what side they are, they make things sound worse than they actually are.
Always.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a possibility that a lot of the things he was saying, she might have even felt that way, but because of the way it was presented, it was very racist. Mm.
No, 100 on that. We had a lawsuit that Leslie and I were involved with, and there was, you know, we hired a lawyer that was like a pit bull and an asshole, and I didn't like him as an individual, but I was like, fuck, that's the lawyer you want, right? He's like a kind of that guy is going to get you because he's suing a big company, and they put shit into this lawsuit. I was like, what? Like, literally, I'm reading the lawsuit that they're writing, and it's like, we're suing for these like 13 things. I'm like, but you know, all she did was break her leg.
Like, wait.
When I say she broke her leg, Karen, like for real, they sued for loss of consortium. You know, and like, okay, yeah, she did break her leg. We couldn't fuck as much. You right, good, all right. But like, is that a monetary thing? Like, would I have added like that to the lawsuit? And it was like, that was like one example of like, honestly, I feel like eight things that
we were like, whoa.
Yeah. And when we questioned them, I was like, nope, include it.
Right.
Throw the kitchen sink at them.
Yeah.
Right, because they're trying to get the most that they yep. can.
Right.
Because that's their job, and it's sad, but that's kind of what you're paying them to do.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's one of those things, is like, most common people wouldn't even dare think of some of the loopholes and some of the things that they know that you could sue over.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do doggy style with my wife. That's worth a God damn it.
Because you know what, it affects your intimacy. Like right, John Fun, it puts a strain on the relationship. It puts a strain on the marriage. You know what I mean? Strain on the marriage. Like it's shit that where you go, well, we'll just adjust. They go, fuck that. Your life has been affected. We get the money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And another thing I was thinking about too is that I'm surprised a lawyer didn't go with the damages side of things, because you know, when they mentioned that cultural competency piece, and yes, I do think that obviously, you know, you have a child, you have to adjust to whatever their interests and whatever kind of child they end up being. But I do know from friends of mine and people that I know that have adopted children of other races that you know, the state doesn't even allow you to do that without taking classes, without going through therapy sessions, without actually being well-versed enough to take into your life a child that's a different skin color than you are. Because it's not just as easy as people like to think it is. Like,
don't
oh,
they make you take classes
we just
and
love and it's great. It's like, no, there are going to be issues that are going to be unique to your situation, and with nobody of the same race in the household of your child, how are you going to provide a context for them to make their way in the world in a sufficient way? So I can imagine like not being prepared for that. That's pretty, especially because like you don't know this until the baby is born. You know, it's not like in the ultrasound. You're like, oh, by the way, it's a black ultrasound. So brush up on your blackness.
You reference it. But if you're adopting a white people adopting a black child, not everywhere, but I'm sure in a lot of states, there's like required like courses and counseling and people you have to talk to. And you've got the number of somebody you can call.
Right, which there should be. Because there is a difference, because there are white people that grew up around black people, but majority of white people, like 60 or 70% of most white people,
90 Karen,
associate, well, 90, my bad, don't associate with black people. Like they can literally go from work, home, social interactions, be out in the world and not interact with one single solitary black or brown person ever unless they choose to.
Yeah.
They have to make a conscious choice. And we are very different than you guys as far as how to take care of your hair, yep. how to take care of your skin.
Mm.
You know, it's little simple things. Like most white people, your hair get oily and you have to wash it. Right. Our hair does not get oily. Our hair is dry. We have to add oil to our hair, you know, and that's why a lot of times when a lot of white people get black children, they either take them to black hair salons. Or either they learn how to do hair themselves, like learn how to do their child's hair themselves, because a lot of mixed children A lot of times if you see their school photos, their hair is all over their head, especially mm-hmm. little girls, because it's one of the things where they didn't know what to do with it. So, you know, it's matted down, or, you know, it doesn't have any sheen behind it, or it just looks crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's what their child is used to, you know. So for that child, that's normal, you know. But for other people, they're going, you might want to add a little bit of shea butter or something.
There was is it white hair, black hair? Is that the one that's the father with the daughter?
It's chocolate hair, vanilla hair.
And it's a father with his daughter. And
no, it's a mom.
I thought it was a father. Well, there's one. He's got all the videos of him doing his daughter's hair and, like, learning about how to do it. But that stuff's needed.
Yeah, it is needed.
It really is, because even with skin, you know, a lot of us, we get ashy. You know, for years, I'm going to tell you right now, I was very ignorant. I thought white people didn't get ashy. I really thought that.
Just our elbows.
And the reason why I thought that was because I don't see ash. Like, black people, we ash, you can immediately tell.
Yep.
You can't really tell on white people. So I thought, well, hey, they just don't get ashy.
Mm-hmm. You get in our bathroom, the soaps and shampoo. First of all, completely different line from everything. Shampoo, conditioner, soap, face soap, up and down. I have my thing. Leslie has her thing. And hers will be like the super most moisturizing whatever. And mine will be like, there's one I use called liquid sand. It's like astringent. And like, cause I get oily. Like even throughout the, like right now, I showered 2 hours ago. My forehead's a little, you know, not really, but
you have to kind of strip that away from your
right.
skin.
And we're trying to put it on in. He makes fun of me. I use like 10 different moisturizers when I get out of the shower. Anyone for my face, one for my hands,
no.
anyone for my feet.
She'll ask me to get the moisturizer, the cream, whatever, and do her back. And I'll use my hands and I'll rub the lotion. I'm like, fuck, I gotta go wash my hands. Like the lotion and the moisturizer I put on your back, it's like it won't come, it won't absorb
into your skin.
Yeah, it's
yes,
like
true.
My water, it like beads off my skin.
Yeah, interracial couple problems for sure. also this week, the Root 100 came out, which was really awesome to see. They name 100 you know, movers and shakers in black media and culture and society, and lots of my awesome friends were on the list, and I just wanted to give a few of them a shout out. At number 40 was Charles Wade, who is one of my favorite people on the entire planet, who runs the Operation Help or Hush organization, and he's just amazing. What they say about him is celebrity stylist Charles Wade doesn't talk about it. He bees about it. After the Michael Brown travesty last summer, he co-founded Operation Help or Hush, an organization about pragmatic action above all else. That is help or hush. At its core, Operation Help or Hush is about supporting activists, and it ingeniously fed 3,000 protesters with food trucks in New York City last year and created online gift registries for supplies from diapers to cutlery during the first months of unrest in Ferguson, Missouri. Since then, the outfit has executed the Ferguson Alternative Spring Break, a community service project for hundreds of college students, created a transitional housing program for protesters, and implemented Freedom Summer 2015, a free community lunch program for low-income children in Ferguson, Baltimore, Philly, New York City, Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Oakland, California. And, you know, when I do the work that I do, I try to follow the model of high impact and low ego. And Charles is my model for that work, because he lives and breathes that. And his organization just does amazing work, and lots of amazing other people. Jeray Netta, Miss Pat Getty is on the list. Opal Tometi and Patrice Cullors and Alicia Garza is on the list.
Ashley Yates,
Dr. Meredith Clark is on the list. I mean, just amazing, amazing people that I'm lucky enough to work with on a regular basis. But wanted to give Charles a special shout out. It's his first year on the list, and just really happy to see him and the organization getting some shine, because they just do the most amazing work and really affect people's lives in such a positive way. And when they see a problem, they just jump in and fucking solve it. So kudos to them. On the flip side,
you know, I'm going to just brag. I wouldn't even call it humble brag. Like 6 or 7 people on that list follow me on Twitter.
Good for you.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, Lord. Can't you hear this? He's so excited about this.
I, you know.
Good Lord. So a young man named Akinola Gonzalez, a student at Hines Community College in Tennessee, was arrested and detained overnight for approximately 22 hours. I'm sorry, he's in Mississippi, in the Hines County Detention Center's penal farm in Raymond, Mississippi, for allegedly sagging and failure to wear his ID, even though he was wearing it. So they had a disciplinary hearing. This gentleman, Akinola, was arrested because his pants, in their opinion, were too low.
Arrested.
arrested.
Not said, hey, buddy, pull your pants up.
Yes.
Not come talk to the principal. Arrested.
Mm-hmm. The school, of course, just started lying off the bat, as they are wont to, telling the press that they don't arrest for sagging on campus. But they had a protest a day ago in support of Akinola, and police were threatening to actually arrest and issue protesters for sagging right during the protest.
Right.
Literally. You need to put your pants up or we're going to write you a citation right now and we can arrest you for that.
Can you be naked? Just no pants at all?
I don't know.
Because like, if it's sagging pants,
if you're white, you can do whatever the fuck you want to do.
That'd be an action I'd do. Just fucking go pantsless all over wherever this
protest
is.
Nobody wants to see that.
Jim. No, but see if I get arrested. Am I going to get fined?
Maybe.
They're sagging so low, they're gone.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. So at the hearing, they did find that... and Duprat, they basically kicked the attorneys for him out of the hearing because they didn't like what they were trying to say to them. They had security forcibly remove them from the hearing. And based on the evidence, they found that he was not in violation of the dress code policy and not in violation of disorderly conduct and not violate any school policy.
His defense attorneys or the prosecution?
The defense attorneys were turned out, but this was the finding of the hearing. Mm. And... according to the review board, all the information that he was not in violation of dress code, he was not in violation of disorderly conduct, he did not violate any school policies. But they said that because he didn't present his identification and that he failed to comply with a school official. So they found him guilty of that. However, they found that because he didn't violate any school policy and he wasn't guilty of disorderly conduct and he wasn't disobeying campus rules, then he shouldn't have been stopped at all.
And I just listen to that correctly. He didn't have his papers and acquiesce to an authority figure.
Correct.
That is fucking just like Orwellian, man.
It's totally crazy. And the cops were like taunting him the entire time, calling him a lowlife, saying he wasn't going to ever be anything. This is the stuff they were saying to him as they were harassing him and arresting him.
I believe that.
It's totally nuts. So they're continuing. There's a petition. I'll have it on the show notes. But I'm just so sick of seeing the ways in which our young people in particular are so hemmed up in anti-blackness and white supremacy in this country when I see what they have to deal with. I think like we get a little bit older and we're able to shelter ourselves just due to our independence a lot of times. And that's not to say we don't deal with those things because obviously we do. And anytime we interact with law enforcement or any of those kinds of areas, we are smack dab in the middle of white supremacy. But for our young people at these critical times where, you know, when you're young and you're still forming yourself and you're still trying to come into your own, it's such a stifling environment to be in. I was at the hair salon this week and there was a young man in there about 19 years old and he was getting his dreads cut out. And I was like, man, I couldn't believe it. And I said to the stylist, I was like, well, he just didn't want them anymore. She goes, no, he started in college and he's on scholarship. He's a basketball scholarship. And his coach told him they were distracting and he had to get rid of them.
That was Aquinas College. They should be on record. You know, don't fucking not say
really?
What it is. And they had in their most recent photo of the goddamn basketball team,
yeah,
about 8 white dudes and maybe 4 black dudes, this like hillbilly bumpkin fucking white dude, always a center, tall and fucking bumbling with the like, we call it hockey hair here. Like it's not quite a mullet, but it's fucking just like all over the place. Beyond the ears, just fucking like, you know, that's not distracting.
Mm-hmm.
Braids, dreads, cut that shit out. And I said this to you, Leslie, this sort of, form of respectability policy. And this isn't even respectability. This is just pure anti-blackness.
Yeah, it's just complete
anti-blackness. It goes on a corporate level. There are no laws protecting hairstyle all our branches of military service, Army, Navy, Marines. They all require. There's a limited number of acceptable hairstyles for black people, and you know, quote unquote, acceptable hairstyles for white people as well. Like. Cropped short, whatever. But the black ones, you can't have it corn rolled. You can't have it, you know, tight braids. You can't have micro braids. Can't have any kind of shit. It's all fucked up. It's just so anti-black.
It's so anti-black. It's like, oh, the way your hair grows out of your head. Yeah, that ain't acceptable.
Right. The way it naturally does what it's supposed to do. Because I think within the last 10 years, natural hair has been acceptable in the corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on where you are, it still is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Parts of corporate America, and especially if you want to do anything where you want a promotion or
yep.
you're trying to go up the corporate ladder, Like, they're like, nope.
If you're in a white environment, and we know personally, there was a person that was on a march with Leslie from New York to D.C.
She's about to mention her. So
and
funny.
Her hair over the march, she let it kind of just go natural.
Well, no, we went swimming at one of the stops.
But it was fucking gorgeous. I even said, like, man, she has a beautiful head of hair. And now we're, you know, on Facebook and friends, and she's at a corporate, you know, muckety-muck law kind of type thing, and kind of not has to be straight, but I feel
no I would say the opposite happened. We talked to her about I was like, hey, listen, like, I noticed every time I see pictures of you, your hair is straight, and then here on the march, since we went swimming, you didn't have a choice, your hair just had to be the way it is, and you know, it's so beautiful this way, why don't you wear it? She's like, yeah, I just always feel like I'm not going to be taken seriously if I wear my hair naturally and at work. She's in publicity, and she's like, that's how I feel like it takes me down a notch in anybody's estimation.
In a white environment, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah, but right. She has, since the march, she has been wearing it faithfully,
you know. And the coda on this is that we talked about Akinola's case in a group on Facebook dedicated to Michelle Alexander's new Jim Crow. So talking about, like, prison abolition.
Mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm. Broken windows policing. Ticky-tacky shit. Like, I can only getting arrested for sagging pants. People in this, and this is, I always have this issue with, like, quote-unquote liberal white people. We don't always see the ways in which our thinking, logic, words, choices, actions are framed by and inherently support supremacy in sometimes subtle and even unconscious ways. But in this group dedicated to Jim, the new Jim Crow, Michelle Angel book, someone's like, well, how low were his pants sagging? What? Like, why is that even a fucking question? How low were his pants sagging? Does it fucking matter? 18 millimeters. What kind of question is that? And there was like five or six things like that. Well, I just, you know, what about this? What about that?
What were the rules? I'm like, listen, if you're trying to fight mass incarceration, your point is to get rid of these rules that unnecessarily police people when they don't need to be policed. And certainly the length of where your pants are riding would qualify for some bullshit that shouldn't be policed. It's craziness.
Yeah. You know what? I need something better. That's right, lame duck blackness. President Barack Obama is requiring insurance companies to cover transgender treatments.
They should.
Can you just hear, like, the entire GOP, like, implode?
What are they going to do now?
Yeah, awesome. I just love this last 2 years of President Obama's tenure.
Yeah, it's been
awesome.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it a lot because, you know, he's like, fuck it. This train ride, you're in soon. There's nothing you can do. So I might as well do everything that I can before I get off this train.
Yep.
And he knows the old adage, like, once you give something to people, you can't take it back. That's not how shit works.
He won both of them.
You know, he's just grand stuff. Like, yeah, you want it? Yeah, boop, let me drop this Mount Denali on you. Boop, let me drop some transgender requirements on you and your treatment for healthcare. Boop, and let me drop this over here.
For real, I hope, I'm going to just knock on wood, I would just love to see it ramp up. And the real end of his tenure, like the 2016, you know, because he's all the way until January
2017. Yeah, he's got
I'd love to see, like, December 16 to January 17 be just like the fucking clemency pen, fucking all kinds of people in jail, everything. I just would love to see him go almost just bonkers with it, over the top. Be like, yeah, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Right.
Bing, bang, bong.
Right. And I'm excited. I'm more excited about him getting out of office.
Me too.
Yep.
Because he's so young, I know that first book is going to be everything. Him and Michelle both are probably going to individually put out books, and I'm going to get copies of them. I'm going to buy the hardback. I'm going to get the ebook. They're getting all my money.
Yeah. And I know people, even despite what the GOP says, most people look at his tenure and, you know, he's, in terms of the changes to our economy and things he's done and the Affordable Care Act, he's already, I think, regarded as one of the best presidents the last 20 years.
All these, every time some douchebag says some shit to me about Obama, I go, hey, let me ask you a quick question. Are you in a better place financially than you were seven fucking years ago, bitch? And every one of them, like, better. They'll cite some shit. I'm like, but let me stop you there, because I know for a fact that you started your own business and now you have two locations of that business in that time frame.
Fucking dick,
so
man.
What the fuck you talking about now, bitch? What you talking about? You know what? They don't have any goddamn thing to say. All of them are better off than they were seven fucking years ago. Every goddamn one of them.
This motherfucker bitches at Obama constantly. Owns two places, businesses, and then like goes out with our other mutual friends and collects the receipts to like scam his taxes and shit and just all the kind. I'm like, dude, fuck you, dude. I hate people like that. Mm-hmm. Why'd you bring that guy up?
But speaking of transgender, I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you guys saw that or heard about Caitlyn Jenner's appearance on the Ellen show, mm-hmm. where she pretty much like low key was like, I don't believe in gay marriage.
Yeah, she was basically like, you know, when it first happened, I didn't understand it. And me being at that time a male was like, I don't understand and I don't, you know, comprehend it. But I think as people grow and mature, your philosophy and how you look at life grows and matures, because we talked about it. And I do think that, and I hope that Caitlyn understands that some her whole lifestyle, there's people in her own party that's like, fuck you and your lifestyle.
Yep.
Yeah, she's a Republican, is she not?
Yes, right. She is.
Yeah.
So they don't care about how much money you have. It's like they constantly are making laws anti you. They push laws anti you. They are not accepting of your lifestyle or anything that you do. So it's going to be interesting as the years go on. And I hope that Caitlyn educates herself outside of her norm, because Roger brought up a good point. Caitlyn has so much money
that's what I was gonna say.
The shit doesn't affect her.
Yeah, you see this with a lot of these like anti abortion, pro life people, you know, anti Planned Parenthood. They say that shit because they don't use Planned Parenthood. They don't need, if their daughter wants an abortion, they can just go pay a doctor to do it. They don't have to worry about that shit. So they're okay taking rights and services away from poor people because they never are touched by the lack of those things in their lives. You know, they don't have to worry about that shit. This is, let me just play real quick Ellen on Howard Stern talking about the interaction.
Caitlyn Jenner is on the show today, our first show, and she really does, she still has a judgment about gay marriage. She's saying that she's and I said, you're wanting people to understand and accept you. This is like really confusing to people, and you still have a judgment about gay people and marriage and like. And she goes, crazy. Well, she said, if the word marriage is that important, and I was like, it is, because that's the word. Like, we want the same thing, everybody.
Well, here's a person on TV crying that, hey, I want to be myself. I want to be genuine.
I had to hide my entire life.
I don't want people to ridicule me.
Yeah.
And then says in the same breath, gee, gay marriage, I don't get it. You know, it's remarkable. Did Caitlyn dance with you?
No, she didn't dance. I don't think she's a dancer. she's a dancer. And she didn't, she didn't want to dance with me because I'm a lesbian. I really think she was great. It was a great interview,
And you're grateful she came on.
And I'm grateful that she was on the show. And I don't really know her, and I'm trying to understand it because I don't fully understand it either. But I also want everyone to be happy. So, but I don't fully understand all of that. But I want her to be happy, which is what I want for her, for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't make sense that someone wouldn't even understand that.
That's the thing that's very confusing about the show, because she still has that conservative underlying philosophy on top of all of this.
Yeah, she's Republican and conservative. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of Republicans are wishing she wasn't Republican. You know?
Yeah, I know. Like, get out.
Yeah.
You know, and she was on, I watched that show, I Am Kate, which I think is generally pretty good. It's interesting. And she's been, you know, I would say overwhelmingly embraced by the gay community.
Right.
Overwhelmingly. She went to that one show her friend did, Candace, and she did a couple other things that were, you know, gay pride. She went to gay pride, you know? So like the, you know, it's LGBTQ, I think I's there now, but you know, it's, I don't understand it, but
yeah, it's just very like they both, like Howard and Ellen. I can call them that because we're on first name basis. Like Howard and Ellen said, that's confusing, and it is confusing just to have this situation. But again, you know, the money is where the issue is, and you know, truth be told, Bruce was a rich white dude, and Caitlin is a rich white woman.
Yeah,
and let's be honest, rich white women, nah, they're not really here for really anybody but themselves, quite frankly. So,
yeah, unless they want to educate themselves, and what does the I stand for?
I don't know, but isn't it I on there now?
I have no idea. You're asking the wrong person. Let me see. I
thought that maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to be wrong.
GBTQ and sometimes I, like, where would I come from?
Okay, so it's QIA apparently.
And what's the
and
I?
It's
in
queer, A? Intersex, and asexual.
Got it.
Was added.
Intersex
so,
and asexual.
There you go. That's the I and the A.
LGBTQIA.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I just wanted to mention that just because we were talking about Obama making this. But for me, my hope for Obama in the last year, like for real, those last couple of press conferences, I really want him to just be like, man, fuck y'all. Like, I just want it to be so black that the whole earth will open up in blackness and it'll be awesome.
He drops the mic.
Just dropping it. Just that's what I want. I'm just so hopeful. You see, it's like on the tip of his tongue. We're just like, motherfuckers. Yeah.
It's going to be close. You can't go full force.
No, he can't go full force. But it's getting closer already. Like, he starts shading people all the time now, and I just love it.
You heard Jimmy Carter's saying the gloves are coming off now that he's, I guess, has terminal cancer.
Is that right? What's he going to do?
He said the gloves are coming off. He's going to name names and shit.
Oh, is he? Yeah. It should be interesting. Uh-huh.
We don't have our audio for Dope Black Girls, do
we? No, but of course our Dope Black Girl this week is fucking Serena Williams.
Mm.
Let me cue this up.
So many women across the globe.
She was, I guess, reporter asked her why she didn't smile.
Yeah, so this she had a press conference after she had a very difficult match against Venus.
Three sets?
Three sets. It was really tough. And this reporter had the nerve to ask her why she didn't smile after the match was over. So let's hear her response.
I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
Serena, you just want to mention you look like you're being pulling it apart. I mean, normally you smile when you win, you come here, you laugh. What happens tonight? Is it just because you beat Venus or because you're thinking about what is going next? What's wrong?
I mean, it's 11:30. I don't, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't want to be here. I just want to be in bed right now and have to wake up early to practice. And I don't want to answer any of these questions. And you guys keep asking me the same questions, so... It's not really, you're not making it super enjoyable. But. Just being honest.
Now, first of all, I can't stand when people ask black women why they're not smiling.
Yes, that's tropey.
Right, just women, period. I'm not here for your enjoyment or my presence.
Yeah, so Leslie's sister, Denise, is an attractive woman and is, you know, I wouldn't say like doesn't smile, but that's just not like her resting face isn't like, you know, yay, smiling. And it's like obscene, you know, like, you know, smile, mama, it's a beautiful day. Like, hey, why don't you smile? Like, show me a smile. Like, just walking
and
down the street.
And I can tell you, I've been her sister my whole life, and it's my entire life I have witnessed her being told to smile her entire fucking life.
What's that about?
And the worst part of it is, like, if she's in a fine mood, somebody asking her that shit puts her in the worst mood. And it's like, who are you? Why do you think you can exact this? And the reason why I specifically mention black women, because I feel like street harassment happens all the time. But this stereotype of trying to make black women not seem angry, it's very specific to us.
That's why I said it's trophy.
I don't see white women being catcalled, being like, hey, smile. They're catcalled. All women get catcalled. But this idea that black women need to be happier for other people's enjoyment
is
so horrible.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, it's almost like the assumptive for the black man is, you know, they should cross the street and, you know, not make white people feel uncomfortable and, you know, try to make themselves look smaller. So the assumptive then for black women is hypersexualize and smile and make, you're here for enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? It's definitely very, very inappropriate.
Absolutely. So there's a little girl. She was on Facebook, I think it was. And she said that she... Well, I'll play the Levine. Let me see if I can pull it up. But she's been making the rounds. Her name is Mimi Harris, and she's been making the rounds in this video that her mom posted. And I'll let Mimi talk for herself.
I was like Serena Williams.
How?
Because I just shoot it, and it goes way up the and bam. I was like Serena Williams.
How else were you like Serena Williams? What did she do? What were you playing?
We were playing tennis, mm-hmm. And I just shoot it up in the air. And, like, Daddy was, like, so cool. He was like, huh? You were just, like, shoot it up in the air. Did you, like, see that? I was like, no. So he, like, said, this is the last one. So I just, like, shoot it way up in the air. Mm. And I was like, Serena Williams.
Who told you were, like, Serena Williams?
Daddy. Alex Serena Williams.
Oh my God, she is so cute.
Adorable.
She and her little face, she's like, I was like Serena Williams.
I threw it up in the air.
Yes. Yeah. So apparently Serena saw the video.
Oh.
And today,
precious
of
too.
Course, today she received package from Chase, which is one of Serena's top sponsors, with one of those giant tennis balls with Serena signature on them, signed letter from Serena, and two tickets to come see Serena play at the U.S. Open.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
She'll be going to see Serena.
I hope she's in the box.
Yeah, I think that if Serena's providing the tickets, I'm pretty sure they'll be pretty good. But it's a good story and just a good example of why Serena is our dope black girl this week. So God bless you, Serena, and best of luck in your semifinal match. We're really pulling for you to get there and knock out this 25-year drought in tennis for a calendar year Grand Slam.
And I love that you got to call it a calendar year Grand Slam, because the other one's called a fucking Serena Slam.
That's right.
Tell me another athlete that's got like an achievement named after him. Not a one.
Certainly not while they're playing. Let's say that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And you know what? We watched the match between Venus and Serena. Did you see it at all, Karen?
I seen bits and pieces. We were recording when the book of it was on.
Yeah, so we DVR'd it and watched it a bit later. But there's just always this, not even subtle, they'll reference her dominance in a power and aggressive and muscular.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you don't think she fucking like strategizes and thinks and plans. Like they almost deliberately diminish the intellectual component of her game by overemphasizing this, you know, athleticism and muscular and aggressive and dominance. I don't know.
How dare a black woman be smart and intelligent? You then have critical thinking skills of her own, especially if it's not something that a quote unquote man can do. Because the thing about her sport is something that she does on her own. It's no help nor assistance. She's out there by herself. So you can't give credit. You know what I'm saying? Like with other things, you can kind of bounce credit around. Mm-mm. There's no credit to give anybody else.
You can't even get coach's notes. Like you can't even in the middle of a match be like, hey coach, what am I doing wrong? Like you don't even have that. There's not even a timeout. Like let me go talk to coach, whatever. You can't even do that. It's all you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of our dope black girls, and speaking of tennis. So this installation of Yes, All Cops, ex-tennis star James Blake was tackled by white police officers in New York City. Blake, if you didn't know, is 35-year-old, once ranked number 4 in the world. He suffered a cut to his left elbow and bruises to his left leg. As five cops held him for 15 minutes outside the Grand Hyatt Hotel. He said, it was definitely scary. In my mind, there's probably a race factor involved, but no matter what, there's no reason for anybody to do that to anyone. He was on his way to make a corporate appearance at the Time Warner Cable at the U.S. Open, and none of the cops identified themselves, including the officer who charged straight at him and bounced him off the East 42nd Street concrete around noon. He just said, don't say a word. He was only turned loose when a former cop recognized the man in cuffs and alerted the arresting officers.
Hey, that's the number 4 ranked tennis player of the world at the height of his fucking popularity.
That's James Blake, the tennis player.
Oh, could you imagine if they would have took him to jail? Oh, hell would have broke loose.
Yo. He said he was only in cuffs for a few minutes, but after he was misidentified by a witness during a credit card fraud investigation.
And he even says that he not only, like, during the interaction, he's like, hey, you know, I'm not going to resist. I'll do whatever you want. I'll put, you know, here I am putting my hands behind my back. I'm not resisting. What's this about? Shut the fuck up. Blah, 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 blah. Like, literally.
Yeah, he said he's a Harvard-educated athlete. He was waiting for a ride to the Queens Tennis Center after an interview with the magazine writer. He was texting on his phone. He looked up and saw someone in shorts and a T-shirt racing at him. He says maybe he was naive. He thought maybe it was somebody that knew him. So he smiled at the guy, and he said the officer never said anything. He just rushed him. The unidentified officer picked him up, threw him on the sidewalk, and commanded him to roll over face down. He said to the cop, I'm going to do whatever you say. I'm going to cooperate. But do you mind if I ask what this is about? The officer said, well, I'll tell you. We'll tell you. You're in safe hands. He says that I didn't feel very safe. You'd think they would say, hey, we want to talk to you. We're looking for something. I was just standing there. I wasn't running. I wasn't even close. It's not even close to being okay. It was blatantly unnecessary. And of course, Commissioner Bratton has said that he wants to apologize to him. Blake says that at first he didn't want to talk about it publicly, but he has the resources to get to the bottom of this. I have a voice, he says.
Right. And he has money. Yep. And he's going to hold them accountable.
Yes.
Yep. Because the only reason why they care is because he was a ex-tennis player. If he would have been a regular black person, nobody would have gave zero fucks.
Yep. He says that, but what about someone who doesn't have the resources and doesn't have a voice? The real problem is that I was tackled for no reason, and that happens to a lot of people who don't have a media outlet to voice that too. So,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, so that happened. So good on you.
The fuck, man.
Good on you.
Cops
there.
Cops are just the worst.
Good Lord.
Did you hear about, and I haven't heard the whole thing, but Cheska Lee and Patrick, her husband, interracial couple, also have a podcast. And it's good.
It's very good.
I know.
It's a great show.
I'm jelly because they've got a platform. And
wow,
interracial.
She's an actual person.
I know. But so they're at the MTV Music Awards, and they got into it with an All Lives Matter kind of person here.
Not kind of person, a douchebag.
We did get in a fight.
Really? No, we didn't. We got into an argument.
It was an argument. An argument is also known as a fight.
Because white people are not being killed by the police. I am black people are. And that's why it's disrespectful. I will go there.
He's covering his eye, his ears. Wow.
All lives matter, dude. All lives matter. Shouting it. It's just, you know, I've said, and I had someone look at it on the Google Trends search. The phrase All Lives Matter didn't exist until Black Lives Matter. It is always and forever in response as a fucking weapon against Black Lives Matter.
Correct. When people say that, all you're trying to do is shut black people up or anybody that cares about black people. Mm-hmm. Because the thing about it is that even the people that say all lives matter, when white people get shot, they are talking about you also. Because to them, all lives really do matter. But the thing is, you have to point out black lives because black lives are the ones that are dying in the streets and getting pulled over unjustly and all this stuff. So it's like you have to make people look at a subsection of the group. I told Roderick this, and I do feel like this. When people say all lives matter, there's a two behind that. Yes. When people says when people say black lives matter, there's a two behind that. People says when a lot of people who are against that say the same thing, they put only in front.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's their assumptive. I heard this the other day. When someone says save the rainforest, they're not saying fuck all of the forest. Right. It's not like save the rainforest, but burn the other fucking deciduous places down. You know, it doesn't go that way. No. You know, if I'm standing around with a fire hose and there's a bunch of houses on fire and your house is on fire and my house is wet and soaking with my hose and I look at you and say, all houses matter, you know. All houses matter. Well, yours is burning to the ground. That's exactly what that phrase does.
Right. And I think for me, another reason why I think people that do the all lives matter, there's a lot of racism behind it is because if you were truly about all lives matter, why don't you support Black Lives Matter? Because Black Lives also is included in that all lives phrase.
Yep.
And I don't see you at any rallies. I don't see you protesting. I don't see you outraged. I don't see you with your signs. When Black people get shot and killed, I don't see you with your signs. When white officers get shot and killed, or white people die in the street because officers do kill white people unjustly also, like they do Black people, not at the same rate. But, like, where are you with these things? You're nowhere to be found. And that lets me know that the only reason why you do this, because I think a lot of people are upset because we live in a society where it's not white-centered anymore. Because white people's lives have always been white-centered. And they have been privileged enough in our country where anything outside of their whiteness, they have not been forced to hear. Prior to social media and all this stuff, they could give a fuck about anybody else because the only time that you ever seen Black and brown people was they were getting arrested. They were, you know, they put it on drug commercials and all this shit to scare you so that you would continue to live in your whiteness and just be ignorant.
Yeah.
And I think that with the growth of social media, Facebook, Twitter, and all these other places, voices are being loud that otherwise wouldn't have a voice. And instead of people being understanding, instead of people going, well, why are these people angry? It's shut up. All lives matter. Shut up. That's what you're doing. Because
yeah.
You really don't want to face the reality that white people did some fucked up shit in our history.
Still do.
Right.
And I'll go a step further. I think we have passed a point at which the response, all lives matter, can be chalked up to like uninformed ignorance. Like, if you are saying all lives matter now, today, 2015, September, you're doing it as a supremacist. You're doing it to say, I'm in alignment and I'm comfortable with the status quo of white supremacy. Mm. There is no more like, oh, I didn't know all lives matter was a, oh, sorry, you know, oops, I didn't know that was a bad response to yeah. Black Lives
that
Matter.
That time is fucking passed.
It's gone. And not to keep going, but Karen, you said centering on whiteness. So we did a bit last week about, was it photo film and color stock and the sort of, you know, these different white people cards. The whole process is literally generated and focused on whiteness. More technology. Is centered on whiteness. Now it's a soap dispenser. Individuals, black folks at the Dragon Con sci-fi fantasy convention in the bathroom at the events hotel discovered the soap dispenser from a British company called Technical Concepts wouldn't sense black hands. So there's a I'll play the little video.
Now we can't get our fucking hands clean?
Yes. And I...
All right.
I'm sorry. And even with the Kinect... black people were saying, like, if they want to do, like, the workouts, they would have to dress in all white. In order for the sensors
to pick them up.
Yeah, and this is the same issue. I'll play this guy's video real quick.
Watch this.
Black hand, no soap.
Black hand, nothing. Larry, go.
Larry's the white guy. There goes the soap.
Oh, my gosh.
And it goes back and forth the comments. But the technology that a lot of these things use for motion sensing is an infrared light reflecting. Like, so there's light that comes out from the device, gets reflected like a radar, and then it receives it back. And darker colored skin, black skin, absorbs more of this infrared light. But it's not... You know, it's not like they couldn't fix it. It right. absolutely should have been like, hey, listen, let's do some quality testing and some product. And, you know, maybe we need to make it more sensitive so that it can sense, you know, darker, complected individuals. Okay. This same thing happened with a HP computer that came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And there was a video of a guy like, you know, because it was supposed to recognize your face and sort of the webcam was going to track your facial movements. And it just wouldn't. Like you said, the Kinect wouldn't recognize them at all.
Mm.
Centered on whiteness. Technology. What?
Right, like brown people just fuck brown people. They don't exist. And not only in photography, just all over, like people talk about the BMI, a lot of that is based off of white people.
Yeah.
You know, when we have these drug standards, they're based off of white people. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times they are the only ones that will go in for this testing and there's no diversity in that. So it's one of those things where, yeah, you tell me I'm too fat when actually I'm not too fat. You're just basing something that's not off of me and my people.
Interesting. And I find, just me personally, that BMI thing, I'm not going to say I think it's bullshit, but I'm a large person. Like, I'm broad-shouldered. I'm 6'4". I'm, like, big-boned at it. And I got down into, like, what they can – I was heavier. I was, you know, actually, like, you know, morbidly obese. Like, my BMI was off the chart. Like, the BMI went up to, like, 35, 40. It was, like, you passed it. Like, I was really large. And I lost, like, a ton of weight, went a little bit too far, like, quasi-anorexic. And I got my BMI down into, like, 23, 24. And the range for me at my height, 6'4", to be a healthy BMI was, like, I want to say like 210, maybe 215, maybe at 220.
You looked still, like you were so – people were like, are you sick, Drew?
They thought I had cancer. Yeah. And then it goes all the way down to like 170, 165 before you're quote unquote too thin. And I looked gaunt. Mm-hmm. My cheeks were sallow. Like, how is this like the healthy, you know? So like my weight where I'm comfortable is quote unquote overweight. Okay.
Right, because I've realized too is that – especially for black women, we have a tendency to retain water. And that's not something that's considered either when they're doing all this BMI and all this stuff either. And when it comes to health and healthiness is do you actually look, how you look and feel? You know, yes, I understand you don't want people to be, you know, obese where it affects their health. But at the same time, you don't want people to look, like you say, sickly either.
Right. Yeah. And for the record, I was a, you know, very healthy, large dude. Like my cholesterol was really good. My BP, heart rate, I was never like in bad shape. Right. Just was, you know, a fucking tank.
Right. So Roland Martin was on TV throwing some shade at a couple of other journalists this week, which was cracking me up. He has this new no lie zone. He's got
like
a
new spin zone.
Everybody seems to have an opinion regarding Black Lives Matter. You listen to these mainstream news folks, you swear they don't know how to actually do any research. Last week, I blasted Bill O'Reilly of Fox News for lying about Black Lives Matter on the air. Juan Williams, who joined him, said they had no agenda. We also busted out that lie. Well, guess who now joins the lie? And that's why we have this no-lie zone. It's CNN anchor Don Lemon. Here's Don last
shocking
week talking with Rashad Turner of a St. Paul, Minnesota chapter of Black Lives Matter.
What is the end game of Black Lives Matter if you don't want to involve in the political process when so many things have come together to help your particular cause?
Well, see, the end game is for us to stop being killed, for us to stop being beat.
But how
does
that happen then?
There's all this talk.
The question, I want to be very respectful of you, but how does that happen without legislation, without being involved in the political or the legislative process? It doesn't just happen from yelling.
It doesn't happen from yelling without being involved in the political process. Don, do you have the capacity to actually use Google? See, this is what happens when you sit in the office all day and you don't do any real reporting. Now, I'm going to pull up for you a column that Juan Williams of Fox News wrote in the Hill newspaper. This is on their website, thehill.com. Scroll up, please. Here's the column, okay? And in this particular column, Juan Williams actually says the following, which is stunning. It is as if he also doesn't know how to research. And I know Juan, and I like Juan. But for some reason, he gets it wrong. He says that they're playing with fire. In the opening line, Black Lives Matter is fast becoming its own worst enemy. He says it lacks an agenda. It is antagonizing the black community's top white political allies, including Democrats running for the party's 2016 presidential nomination. And it is not finding common ground with any of the Republican majority in Congress. He then goes on to say, in the same piece here, the movement's failure to get its collective act together carries real danger for the political clout of African Americans in the 2016 election. But check this out. This is hilarious. He says in this piece that they have failed to connect with Latinos. Quote, they're not finding common cause with Latinos. He then goes on to say that they also are not involved in what's happening in Congress. He lays out in terms of what they should be backing. He ends it by saying they should be lobbying Congress, holding voter registration drives, quizzing candidates on their plan for sentencing reform, but don't heckle the candidates and incite violence by calling for cop killing. The movement could be critical to securing and mobilizing black support for criminal justice reform that actually would improve black lives. What Dwan Williams wrote is a flat-out lie. It simply isn't the truth. The fact of the matter is, folks in the Black Lives Matter movement are doing that. Now, let me teach Juan and teach Don and teach Bill about Black Lives Matter. First of all, understand this. Black Lives Matter, folks, started as a hashtag in 2013 after George Zimmerman was acquitted of killing Trayvon Martin. The founders of Black Lives Matter, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi. Now, that was the hashtag. It evolved into a series of organizations. There are some 25 chapters right now that are autonomous of the National Black Lives Matter organization. But here's the piece all these media folks don't seem to understand. When you talk about Black Lives Matter, it's not really one entity. That's why it is called a movement. In fact, there are numerous organizations that utilize the calling card Black Lives Matter. In essence, it was a simple three-word statement that summed up the feelings of so many African Americans who were outraged to see African Americans who were dying and justice not being done. That's the reality of Black Lives Matter. But let me walk y'all through this here, okay? This is real simple. When you talk about these various organizations, pull them up, please. Here's the deal. You've got Black Lives Matter Network, the Dream Defenders, which first of all came out the Trayvon Martin killing in 2012. You got Black Youth Project 100, Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Go to the next one, please. You have Color of Change, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, Project South, Southerners for On New Ground, Organization for Black Struggle out of St. Louis. Next graphic, please. Advancement Project, Baltimore Algebra Project, Center for Constitutional Rights, the NAACP Legal Defense Educational Fund, the Ohio Students Association. Next graphic, please. You have Rise Up Georgia, Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, Center for Popular Democracy, Ferguson Action. These are the groups, folks, who...
So, yeah. Good on you, Roland, taking it to him. I love you telling Don Lemon to fucking search Google.
Does he know how to search the Google?
What does Don Lemon know how to do? Karen, what does he know how to do?
A lot of people don't, yeah. Yeah, Don Lemon, he's a piece of work. He, me and Roger talk about this. If you are a black person and you say black people ain't shit, there is a wealth of money out there waiting for you. And Don Lemon understands that. Mm. And I honestly think either him or his team literally goes into black Twitter and social media to see what black people are talking about and purposely strategically pick topics to make people mad because he really doesn't give a fuck about you being angry. They just want you tweeting and posting about
exposure
it and
being trolling. Angry.
Because that's what matters is that they know people are watching. They could give a fuck about how you personally feel about it.
Yeah, and you're right. It sells to their audience. Their audience is, you know, Rex. White people. And there's even we've talked about a couple of different things. But I don't know if we talked about this on this particular show. But there are the weird kind of cottage industry of white people passing around YouTube videos of black people like. Bitching about Black Lives Matter.
Oh yeah, they pass it around like snuff films. So, yeah. Look at this black person that hates black people too.
And I don't know what it's like. I don't know what like. Not that I get Don Lemon and other people that kind of like you know. I'm not gonna say sellout because that's not the right. I'm not casting aspersions on Don. I'm not doing that. But
I will. On fuck some that
level,
dude.
On some level, money. I'll just say money corrupts. I get that. Money corrupts. But what the fuck does 5,000 YouTubes corrupt? Like, who is that woman that's a cop?
Yeah, the thing you don't get, though, Drew, is that in those people's cases, like, people fail to understand the ways in which supremacy affects black people just like it affects white people.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
And,
black.
Well, how can you not? You know how it affects white people. What would make the effects be able to affect black people the same way? And a lot of times what happens is if they've been able to opt out of the effects of blackness, in certain cases, they will fool themselves into thinking that these effects don't happen to other people. It's the same delusion. I believe my reality and I can't understand anybody else's reality. And so they feed into this supremacist narrative that black people are doing whatever, whatever. It's sad to see, but it happens. You know, it is what it is.
Because the thing about white supremacy, everybody's a victim.
Yep.
Even white people are a victim because everything is catered so much towards them that it's almost like unless they want to not be ignorant, they have to almost have to fight the stupidity, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because the world tells them they're the best. The world tells them they're all right. The world tells them that you know, as long as you and your children are fine, everything else doesn't matter. You have a lot of white people that a lot of Republicans have tricked them, and they literally vote against their own interests, because what a lot of people fail to realize, poor white folks and black people and brown people, those people who a lot of these white people have tricked other white people, other poor white people, into thinking one day you're going to be rich like me, one day you're going to have this shit, like promising them a dream that will never be there. So, you know, you're considered the same as the brown people. You know, like you pointing at me going, this nigga over there, a lot of those white people are pointing at you going, you're trash and that's nigga, and I don't want to be bothered with either one of you. But because they fooled you into thinking that you're on the same level, and you're not, it's a good strategy. And so many white people have been fooled, because the thing about a lot of white people, once the downturn of the economy a few years ago, and white people started losing their job, and it wasn't because they were lazy, and it wasn't because they didn't do their job, and it wasn't, you know, their fault. All of a sudden, everybody want empathy and sympathy, run to the states, and the state be like, oh, North Carolina was like, oh, you know what? Unemployment used to be 2 years, but because Obama told us, if we pay for a year, he pay for a year, and if you go under a year, we're not going to pay. And we go, fuck that. Now your unemployment went from 6 months to like 2 or 3 months now. Mm. You voted these people in the office.
Yep. Yeah.
That make these decisions. And so you don't care. But I just, other people losing their jobs are always faults of their own. You're losing your job. You're just a good, wholesome American. Right. Why can't other people be good, wholesome Americans also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. For sure. So we want to finish up with something a little bit fun. This really funny article came across. I think our associate producer, Carl, shared it, which is the Caucasian's Guide to Black Barbecues, Karen. So we're going to walk through this. We have an actual representative of the white race here, one very white guy, and we can see what happens. So they start off saying that as interracial dating, integration, and cross-cultural friendships increase, many people find themselves attending events in which they are the minority and have no frame of reference for which to base their etiquette. In an effort to bridge the cultural gap, we all have to diverse at some point. I've created a few rules for my Caucasian friends who might find themselves at a black cookout. Number one, this is a very important rule, you gotta bring something. That's a fact.
Totally agree.
Your presence is not enough.
No, it is not. This guy says, one time, this is Michael Harrier who wrote this, I went to a coworker named Tom's Barbecue and brought a pasta salad. He looked at me like I had shit in the middle of his living room.
Yeah. Oh, goddamn pasta salad, because it's going to be nasty. It's going to fucking raisins and some other shit. And then people going to be like, mm-mm. Because, you know, black folks have designated people to bring things. So they'll tell you what you need to bring.
Exactly.
And they'll ask, too, what am I bringing?
Yes,
what
do you exactly. need? At a black cookout. And yes, if there's more than 7 black people, the name automatically changes from barbecue to a cookout. Only the meat and the grill is supplied by the host. Everything else is brought by the people that are showing up. And no, it's not a fucking potluck. We don't do potlucks.
No,
so,
because
yes.
The thing is that for a lot of white people, they don't understand. It's like, we know our family members and we know the people that's coming. If you can't cook, you bring in cups and plates.
Yes.
And ice. Like, we know you can't cook, so we're never going to ask you to bake or bring anything.
That's right.
Tell you to go to the store and purchase something, like, because I come to eat. They're like, you ain't fucking up my meal.
Nope. Or you can bring lots of aluminum foil. I don't know what the hell black people do with all the aluminum foil at cookouts, but they always need more of it.
I'm going to tell you what they do, sweetie. There's several things they do with it. A lot of times,
to go.
Depending on how you grill. Yep. Some people use it on a grill, but a lot of times it's to wrap up your take home.
To go. You got to take the plate home for Uncle whoever who had to work that day.
We were the center of our family's activities, our house in New Jersey. So, you know, 4 or 5 different times a year, there'd be a Thanksgiving, Christmas, and we'd always have a cookout.
Yeah,
and
every summer we had a cookout.
30, 40 people, and we'd cook a lot, and everyone would bring shit home.
Always.
That's hilarious. I don't know what the fuck they need. That's hilarious. I never really thought about that, but I would have to think, yeah. You go, what the fuck are we doing with this?
Yeah, well, I know at least your sister, Karen, and your mom would bring Tupperware. Like, they would be ready. Yeah. They'd have their own ass empty Tupperware.
But you could do lots of shit with aluminum foil. You can
tent it up.
Yeah, you can get really creative with aluminum foil. The aluminum foil can be the take-home container if you know how to
fold it right.
You can fold it up, get it hard, make two or three layers of it.
My sister could put some soup in a fucking aluminum foil.
I'll say this. As a white person, all the barbecues I've been to, never brought anything home. I'll eat like 9 hot dogs, but I won't bring anything home.
Yeah, black folks would get mad. If ain't no leftovers, they'd be like, well, you didn't cook enough.
You didn't get enough nearly enough.
In fact, I'm disappointed if the grill doesn't come on like a third time at like 11:30.
Yeah, late. Where you're like, 11:30. Yeah,
turn the grill off. More hot dogs. Yes, oh, exactly.
They fry another round of fish.
Yep. Number two, it's a cookout. Black people's barbecues are outside. At the previously mentioned Tom's barbecue, everyone mingled in his living room. I was nervous as fuck because for the first hour, all I could think was, these motherfuckers are about to have an intervention on me. So don't go into the house unless you have to pee, which means you need to bring a chair, bug spray, and another chair because someone's going to sit in your first chair when you go pee. Yes. Got to. Number three, do not arrive on time. If they say shit is going to start at 3, that means you should arrive around 4:47. CP time is a very complicated algorithm to figure out. But the published start time at a black barbecue is the time which they start thinking about preparing to get ready to almost light the grill.
Start thinking about preparing to get ready to almost light the grill.
The thing about me, I tell people, I have a lot of white folks traits when it comes to certain things. Because for me, when I say, we're having at such time, you know, if I may be wrapping up, you make it 30 minutes if I'm running behind. But odds are, I'm gonna start real close to that time. And if you're not there, you just SOL because I'm like, people have other things to do, they got places to go. But I got family members, me and Roger both got family members, they say they start something. We'll literally show 3 hours late. They'll be like, all the food's gone. We'll be like, we good. A lot of times we eat before we go and shit like that because we're like, I don't want to be bothered. And let me tell you something else. Another reason why I started going late to black cookouts, I come to have a good time. I didn't come there to be your professional shoe self. Because you decided to fucking start late.
Could you cut this up? Could you season this up? Could you do this? Yeah, nah.
Next thing you know, you frying fish.
Next thing you know, you should have brought a fucking apron with you.
Right. And you're like, but I came to be cute. So I was like, no. I got tricked one too many times. I was like, nope. I will be 3 hours late. They had to call us. They're like, y'all coming? Yeah, we'll be there. Another hour and a half, we'll show up.
Exactly. Number four, it's very important. Learn how to do the wobble. Very important.
An electric slide too.
Yes. He says that he doesn't do line dances, but he's noticed that white people feel so included if they know how to do them. So that's a very important piece. He also thinks that the line dances should be used by the UN to prevent war. Because you can't be that mad when you're doing the Cupid Shuffle. Just saying. You know.
But that's another one. Those are the three. You have to learn those three. I actually had to teach my mama how to do the Cupid Shuffle because she went to her 50th high school reunion last month. And she was like, it was hilarious. She was like, baby, I'm going to my reunion. And they was talking about this dance and there's line dancing. I want to learn how to do it because I don't want to be not cool. Now, this is the woman who doesn't have a computer in her house. But she worried about being cool. She was like, I don't want to not be cool. And so she was like, well, what's that song? And I was like, is it this one? And I played it on my phone. She was like, yeah, that one. She was like, I want to learn that one, and I want to learn the electric slide. I said, oh, it's like, we're going to go slow.
Take it slow.
The Cupid Shuffle gives instructions.
Yes, just like, do like, what he like, says. It's Simon folks. Says for black people.
Right. The Cupid Shuffle gives instructions. It to the left, to the right. Like, it didn't tell you to kick.
Yes.
Like, it breaks it down. So me and her went through that, and she had a great time.
Aww. That's why I love the cha-cha slide.
Yeah, the cha-cha slide is another one.
I could do that. Tell me what to do. Got it.
How low can you go? Number five, make friends. Here is a foolproof method for making a new black friend at a cookout. One, bring a bottle of dark liquor. Number two, keep it in your trunk or your car. Three, someone, usually Tasha's new boyfriend, is going to ask, what to look at? Wait. Number four, wait. I know you want to rush up to him and say something, but ignore your white people timing instincts just as one time.
Your white people timing instincts.
Number five, when he changes the subject, walk over to him and say, walk to my car with me. He'll know what you mean. Number six, when you pop that trunk, you'll have a friend for life. Boom.
Yes, you will.
Where the lick at?
You in there. Where the lick at? Number six, do not play spades.
Concur.
Very important.
Know how to play.
Yes. Don't. Don't do it. Like, just.
Like, I'm, for me, I enjoy spades. And I've seen people brawl over spades. So for me, I could play with relaxed people. Cause a lot of people, I can't play. I was like, well, I play with you. They was like, we're going to lose. I was like, we'll just lose together. I'm not going to scream at you. I'm not going to fuss at you. Because the thing, everybody be like, why don't you know how to play? But yet you get in there, they'll be like, you cut that. And you be like, don't you think you're kind of stressing them out, dog? Like,
right. Right. It's not the fucking Olympics. It's just some spades, right?
Right, that's how I learned how to play. Just from people just being ignorant and then get mad at you when you fuck up and shit. You're like, come on, dog.
See, I love spades, but we got my nephew. He's got a best friend, and I'm not saying that like you cheating is like easy at spades. But if you're communicating subtly to your partner about what you're playing and what you have and don't have, if you're good at it, if you've got like code words and shit, and I'm not saying he did have that, but it was like, man, this is some ripe bullshit. No fucking way. You ain't got none of this. And you just no, stop.
But you see, that young man has not played with them OG people.
Yeah,
because OG people would tell you fucking quit communicating with each other. Like, they'll flat tell you quit communicating with your partner. And I played with people that the second something hit the board, they can tell you that you reneged, and they can tell you that if they see something hit, they'll be like, I better not see that cut again.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely count. I've been playing cards a long time. I can and do actively count the whole deck, all suits, and I'll know right away. Like, done. You just reneged. Yes. It's over. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm sufficient enough at it that I got in a huge fight with a friend we played cards with all the fucking time. And we were playing a different game, Euchre, which is never with spades. I don't know what we're playing. But there's a point at which the outcome is a given. It's like, you know, I've been counting the cards. I know every other thing here. And there's none of this suit. And I'm going to play this. And there's no trump. And the next, you know, seven tricks are mine. So I laid it down. I was like, these are all mine. And she fucking went off her fucking rocker. Like, you can't do that. That's not right. I don't believe you. I don't trust you. I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? You just have to play it. You have to play it. And I was like, well, what possibly could I have done to not have taken all this? Well, you could have led with the two. Oh, you mean I have only this one suit that nobody else has and there's no trump and you think I would have started with the two? Fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, and it just was a huge thing. She couldn't get over it. And like, not that we didn't play cards after that, but I was like, let me play out every goddamn trick because you fucking need to fucking see it.
Yeah. So he says, don't. There's a myriad of reasons why, because it's like, you don't know how to play and you might get in your feelings over that shit talking because James is gonna call you a bitch. He always does that. Number seven is park down the street.
Yes.
You do not want to have to wait for somebody to move their car. You should get out, especially after your bitch ass lets James run a Boston on you. See, I bet you that offended you and you probably don't even know what that means. That's why you shouldn't play spades.
A Boston.
Yeah, because what we do, me and Roger, we have like techniques. A, we always park across the street or where we won't get boxed in or blocked in, because I don't know how much further, but you know it's time to leave when the drunk uncles and aunts and stuff come out. Like, you know, that's your cue. It's time to go. Or when you are playing spades and somebody comes and, you know, they try to holler at you because they might not know the family like that. You know, it's going to be some problems. So, you know, me and Roger can literally be like, if somebody gets real loud, me and Roger could be like 50 feet from each other. I hit eye contact with him. He'll hit eye contact with me. Y'all and out. I could be in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
I'll be like, hey, y'all, I got to
go. I got to go.
They'd be like, so I'm like, you know what? You want, you can take my hand. I'm like, I got to go. And like, me and Roger won't even say nothing to each other. We get in the car. I'm like, bitch, did you see that? I'm like, yeah. I was like, get us the fuck out of here.
The truth. And we had that before iPhones and texting and everything. Oh, yeah. We'd be somewhere and we'd catch each other's eye and I'd look at you and look at me like, okay, gotta go. We out.
Yep. Number eight, don't worry about the drunk uncle. You know how white people Thanksgiving, there's always that one drunk uncle. Anyway, at black cookouts, all our uncles are the drunk uncle. Except Jerome, who's saved, sanctified, and filled with the Holy Ghost.
Yes, he's gonna be there too. And the thing about the drunk uncle, like you say, you ignore them, but you also know when it's time to go too.
Yep, absolutely. Number nine, for domino advice, please refer to number six, which means do not play. Domino's. And number 10 is listen. As the evening progresses and the alcohol flows, it becomes more dangerous to be at a black cookout. Now, I know that white people get drunk and fight too, probably more than we do, but here's the difference. Black people can fight. There is, however, a very simple and effective way to know when a black cookout is getting dangerous. The music. So here are the black cookout music alert warning indicators. Number one, pop music, current music. If you hear The Weeknd or Fetty Wap, you're pretty safe. That means the kids are around. Everything's cool.
Right.
Number two, old school R&B. When Al Green or Paul Martin is playing, everything should be okay. Everyone's getting lubed up, eating, and Tasha's boyfriend has been waiting on you by your car.
You live right now.
Number three, old school hip hop. Now only the guys are left, only the drunk ones. They're arguing about whether Rakim was better than Tupac while Uncle Jerome is talking about Kool Moe Dee being the GOAT. Shit is getting sketchy. You better get ready because it's going to jump off soon. The spades table is pumping. The dominoes are being slammed down. And then you lock eyes with one guy and you can tell he's thinking, if James call my mama a bitch one more time,
right,
it's time to start gathering your stuff and making your way to the car. Threat level 4 is gospel music. If you hear we fall down, but we get up. Run, motherfucker, run. Get the fuck out of there. Leave your camp chairs. Tell Tasha's boyfriend to get the fuck away from your car with that screwdriver he's trying to break into your trunk with and leave. And aren't you glad I told you to park down the street at this point? So those are the rules, the white rules for going to a black cookout.
You should give her a shout. That's Michael Harriet, journalist, yes, poet, and host of the popular podcast, The Black One.
Yes, The Black One. He also has a web series called The Stay Woke Show. It's very funny. So check it out. We'll have all those links on the show notes as well. But that was a really good piece he wrote, really funny. And I definitely think it was a solid list of rules that will serve you white people well if you're going to do one of those.
Yes. Oh, I can put something else. Well, it is not ready for a cookout, but when you go to like Thanksgiving and Christmas, don't eat the chitlins.
That's a good one.
Because my brother-in-law's wife is white, and I remember we had went down my Sharon's house, and they had chitlins and stuff, and you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of black folks eat chitlins. I used to eat them years ago, and she was like, she's my heart, y'all. I love her so much. And she looked at me and she was like, I'm going to try these chitlins. And I looked at her and.
Don't do it, girl. Like,
you know how you just want to snake somebody. I'm looking like, you're not. I was like, no, they're nasty. She was like, they put them up a rice with hot. Yes. But it's like, you don't understand. It's going to be terrible experience. It's like, she ate it. She was, I was like, they nasty. And she was like, mm-hmm. I was like, I tried to warn you.
I lived in Argentina and they have a dish called chinchilines, which is chitlins. It's the same thing. And they grill them. They put them on the grill. And our neighbors invited us over and we don't speak hardly any Spanish at the time. And like, oh, you know, come on up. And they serve chinchilines, chitlins. So I'm like, all right, fuck, I'll, you know, chow down, eat some. And the taste wasn't bad. I kind of enjoyed them, like grilled. But, and I don't know if it was just like, my white body was not prepared for chitlins, but nope. Like, oh man, like about like we're on our way to the airport and about 45 minutes later in the car, an hour from the airport, I'm like, oh my gosh. And by the time I got to the airport, I was sweating. I literally was in the bathroom so long. Leslie opened the men's room door like, in the airport. It's like,
are you okay?
Drew, are you okay? Right. Like I was in there just like dudes were walking in like, hey, yours. It's like, it killed me. It tore me up.
Because the thing about chitlins is that unless you're kind of old school, people don't clean them properly. Like, it's actually a proper way to clean them and do them where they don't smell like shit, honestly, and they don't taste like shit. But most people don't know how to do that. Only your grandma, your great-grandma, or somebody she taught know how to do that. So for most people, and chitlins is one of those things like macaroni and cheese and cornbread. It's like, who made this? Oh, no, I don't want your food. That's some messy shit that's had at the black cookout. Ask the people what to eat. Like for real, because we got that who made this. And especially you go to the, I don't know if it's the right or the wrong cookout, some people will ask me, they'll point at the dish, who made this? Tasha, I don't want that, Tasha. You can't cook.
I would just stand back a bit and like wait for like the first wave to go through and just based on what's being eaten versus not. You know, like Tasha's funky mac and cheese is sitting there. Nobody touched it.
Right. There's certain things like, you know, potato salad is yellow, not white. You know, simple things like that that you go, but I like white, you know, because I've had white potato salad. It's decent. But I know when I go to cookout, I'm going to get yellow.
Yep. In fact, that was the episode of that was the name of the episode when we had Rod on was potato salad is yellow.
It is.
That's
though.
True. It is.
It is. Mm-hmm. We wrap it up. Talk about some TV and movies.
Yeah, we talk about some TV movies. So you guys watch The Strain, right, Karen? Or do you not watch that?
Yes.
Yes. What have you been thinking as we're heading into, I think it's like last couple episodes now.
It's going to be interesting to see the relationships, the dynamics, the master, Gus. Like my mind is kind of all over the place.
Yeah, they haven't been showing Gus very much the last two episodes. It's been like a little...
I gotta be honest. I find it... I enjoy it. I do. And I watch it maybe more than you, Leslie, but it's sometimes like... convoluted. I get a little confused.
It's confusing sometimes.
A little bit.
Right. And it's not as exciting. Like this season is a lot slower and it's not as exciting as last. And the last season was great because it was fast paced. It moved. And then in this season, I guess they're trying to be more in depth and kind of give you more storyline. But it's sometimes it doesn't go over well. And then sometimes the editing doesn't make any sense. Like, when Gus and the dude that was like the luchador, if I'm calling him right, the dude with the mask, like 1 second they're falling out and he kicks him out of, he tells him to beat it. Then when they come back, he's like sitting in the kitchen talking to him. I was like, I thought y'all just fell out and he kicked him, you know, little things like that. So I'm like, did you edit this out of order? Did you like, maybe that's the stuff that I pick up on because I watch so much television. I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they fucking finally let that one dude be bald though. After that toupee was kind of not
his
right.
Toupee didn't bother me, but yeah, it bothered a lot.
It bothered the fuck out of me. Just like, why did they write it in that way? Like, really, there's just no reason for you cast a dude that's bald. How about the character be bald or put a decent fucking wig on him because it was not a good one. Please, something decent. I mean, because he's full bald. It's not even like he's balding and they just like covered up a little patch or something. He's like, well, they took it off finally. I don't know about that new kid either. He's getting some real Carl from season one of the Walking Dead vibes, this letting in that fucking mama his and shit.
I'm going to tell you right now, new Zach's face is terrible. I hate that kid's face. Like, I can't explain it, but he's just, it's almost like he overacts, if that makes sense.
Yes. That's
and
right.
Because he overacts, he becomes so fucking annoying. And like the other kid wasn't as aggressive. So like the first Zach they had, if they would have had him transition, it would have been more understanding. But you basically bring somebody who is like a, I don't know if it's older, but just a fuller child, if that makes sense, like a taller, fuller child, and he's just so hard that you're like, I just want to smack you in the face, little boy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we'll see what happens. I liked last season more than this season, I'll say. But me I've been too. Sticking with it just because I'm already, you know, vested. And, I mean, I guess I care if somebody eventually kills fucking Nora because she irritates me so. So hopefully that will happen eventually.
Hopefully soon.
Soon. Please. I'm begging you. And the other thing that's been weird is the whole, what do you think about the girlfriend, the lesbian girlfriend? Like, I think she's like some sort of double agent or something. Like, where was she? That whole thing is real sketchy.
I thought she was dead,
me.
But she wasn't dead.
But she wasn't dead. Like, I don't know. Just now that we know that they've been planting people and shit, I don't know. It just seems weird to me.
What's Ratcap's real name? I forget that character.
Fett.
Yeah, Fett's not happy at all.
No, he's not.
He got left out of that.
She done took his girl away. Mm-mm.
Yeah,
mm-mm.
You know, and to me, I think it's more to her than meets the eye.
Me too.
It wouldn't, this, like I said, I haven't read the books or anything, so this is just my personally educated guess. It wouldn't surprise me if the master could make people function humanly, like they never completely like transition over.
Right.
And the reason why I said that is because you remember at the very beginning with the airplane, how those people actually functioned for a while.
Right.
You know, not trying to be funny, like how they literally like function as human beings.
Right. The mom was, she was still interacting with the nanny and everything. Yeah. You're right.
Walk, they still talk. Like, this is just my hypothesis, and that it wouldn't surprise me if something happened. Or they, hopefully they'll go into details where he got her, tortured her, and, you know, made it where, you know, because the master can see through their eyes. So
right. Right.
It might be where he's actually kind of tracked. Like, we'll see. But this is just my theory, where he's tracking her and them through her. And he may have strategically planted her there because they figured out that she would eventually go back.
Absolutely.
So it's but that's just my wild, crazy theory. I might be completely off, but it would not be shocking if you found that out.
You're probably right. You might be right.
It's very, very exciting.
I can't remember. You're watching Fear of the Walking Dead, right?
Yes.
And we're reviewing it, and I like it, and I think it's doing well, but a lot of people aren't really thrilled with it. I think they were expecting more, I guess. I don't know.
Let me tell you, this is just my, and you know, Roger didn't agree with me on this, but this is just my opinion. I think that for, wait a minute, before I go with what me and Roger didn't agree on, a lot of people fail to realize that the audience for the first time is more educated than the actual actors. And a lot of people can't take being more educated because in their mind, they feel like the things you're doing are dumb. But you have to realize it's out of lack of knowledge, because we watch 4 or 5 years of Rick and them just doing this awesome shit. But you're talking to people where everything that's happening to them is for the first time. So they're not going to care about the zombie shit because they think it's fake. They think it's not real. They're going to, you know, deal with their real world problems.
Yeah.
Because as far as they're concerned, this shit don't exist, you know. And then even once it's introduced to you, it's still up to you to believe it or not. You know what I'm saying? To believe it's reality or not. Versus in Rick and them world, the outbreak has happened. Everything has passed. And
sure, sure.
I guess in my mind, I told Roger that I think that this was the story that they originally wanted to show. But because of networking, they was like, no, let's do the comic book version. Because with the comic book version, you already have a built-in audience and all that stuff. And then they went back. Because to me, I guess in my mind, because I love The Walking Dead, it's not a disservice to me. But for some people, they feel like it's a disservice because it's almost like you're going backwards.
Yeah. And I think people love to bitch. They want more. And they're, you know, the first episode of Fear of the Walking Dead had 10 million viewers. It took The Walking Dead 3 seasons to get to that number. So it just, they're coming with different expectations. But we talked exactly about what you're talking about with the characters, like inability to like not just ascertain what is and isn't, but then to communicate it. And it was Black Rob that said, you need like a zombie apocalypse code word. You know, like Kevin Hart's like, you know, pineapples, pineapples. You need something to be like, no, this is fucking for real. It's a zombie apocalypse. Pineapples. Let's go. You know, like, because otherwise you wouldn't.
And the thing about it is that people have to realize if some shit like that was to happen today, people act like everybody would fucking panic immediately. You would not. You just wouldn't. You would believe, like a lot of people, believe in the government, believe everything's going to be taken care of. Like, you know, it would be a subsection like Tobias that was like, bitch, you didn't know, you know, this been spreading across the country. But the average American would be oblivious.
Yeah.
No, to this. So I understand their actions.
I think of myself as a, you know, pretty practical, pragmatic guy. But I'm also a, you know, significantly doubting Thomas, like, can you know, and if it like for real, like I don't think zombies are ever going to happen. I'll just say zombies are not going to ever happen. That's not a thing. It won't happen. But let's just hypothetically say it did. I wouldn't believe shit. I'd be like, you'd have to come right up to me like dead ass fucking be dead and come alive and bite me in the face, and I would be one of those idiot people like, come on, you're crazy, these are zombies. And I'd be done right away,
like most Americans, like most people would, because the whole concept is a foreign thing, and it's just one of those things where scientists are so fucking crazy. It would not surprise me if they got some fucking zombie gene out there that they just hadn't released yet.
You know, there's probably, and like there are in nature, there are things like there's a fly or a bee of some sort. I think it's a wasp actually, and the wasp will put its larva, it injects it into like some other thing, like an ant or something, and its larva like infects the host and starts to grow, and then makes the ant all fucking crazy and shit. There's a bird whose poop has a toxic organism, and when snails eat this toxic organism, they cause the snail to climb to the top of a tree, and this like big fucking like thing grows out the top of their shell. So like the bird's poop makes the snail go up to the top of the tree with like a bat signal saying, come eat me. So it's a big circle to like, you know, keep eating more snails and pooping. And but it's like, you know, those kind of things, like we could get some sort of infection that, I don't know, makes me into a fucking zombie.
Because let me tell you why. Because people are evil. So it would not surprise me if somebody somewhere is fixing something or crossing some genome, splicing some shit somewhere in the lab in the bottom of their mama's basement.
Absolutely. The last thing I wanted to mention was this movie that is on Netflix right now called Mississippi Damned. I'll read the quick synopsis. It's wanting to escape the easy part taking place. Wanting to Escape was the easy part, taking place in 1986 and 1998 and based on a true story. Three poor black kids in rural Mississippi reap the consequences of their family's cycle of abuse, addiction, and violence. They independently struggle to escape their circumstances and must decide whether to confront what's plagued their family for generations or succumb to the same crippling fate forever damned in Mississippi. Bitterly honest and profoundly subtle, writer-director Tina Mabry successfully captures growing up in a world where possibilities and opportunities seem to die in the face of the suffocating reality of physical and sexual abuse, obsession, and a myriad of destructive compulsions. It is being distributed by Anna DuVernay's distribution company, Array, which was just expanded. It used to be called AFFIRM, the African American Film Festival Release Movement, and now it is being called Array, to tell the stories of women and women of color and people of color. Generally speaking, they've announced two more films that have been added, Ayanda and The Mechanic, which is directed by Sarah Belcher, a South African filmmaker, and Out of My Hand, a Japanese filmmaker, Takeshi Funkima, and it's really exciting. Ava says the fundamental disrespect inherent in the distribution of films and application of films. So there is a cinema segregation in how films are seen and not seen. What we're saying is we're not going to depend on those things anymore, end quote. And so this was the first release under that banner this year. Mississippi Damned is on Netflix right now. I can tell you I have not watched the whole thing. I had to stop in the middle. It's really heart-wrenching and really you know, tough film. It's incredibly well made, incredibly well acted. It's, you know, a great movie, but it's not an easy one either. Feminista Jones wrote on Blog Her, Mississippi Damned hit entirely too close to home, where she tells her own personal story of sexual abuse through her the younger years of her life and how it affected her as an adult. She starts in part saying, I recently watched the critically acclaimed Mississippi Damned, a film by writer-director Tina Mabry. It follows a family through generations of poverty, cycles of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. It was a compelling movie that will grip your emotions and give no reprieve. It is definitely worth watching, though I caution you to do so when you're feeling safe and comfortable absorbing what is an unrelentingly honest story of familial tragedy and despair. I admit that I was unprepared for the impact the film would have on me, and I did not expect to lose sleep or be triggered to the point of having vivid flashbacks to my own similar experiences. It's a fantastic movie, and what troubles me the most is that the stories are not uncommon and are disproportionately relevant to too many Black American families. And I'll share a link to Feminista's piece as well, because it's of course, as usual, by her, very well written. But definitely suggest people check that out. Again, it's on Netflix, Mississippi Damned. And of course, we are standing this week for the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, which, Karen, tell everyone what nights you guys are on. So I know you guys are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, right? No, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, and Friday you have premium content, correct?
Yes, we normally are from Sunday to Wednesday is the regular, the standard show. Saturday is the feedback show. Sunday through Wednesday is our, you know, standard show. If you're premium, we normally do Balls Deeps on Fridays, and sometimes on Saturday we do the Nerd Off or other spinoff shows we might do. But you can find everything about us over at the Black Guy WhoTips.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and about any other podcast you can think of. My name, for those of you who are just hearing my voice for the first time, I'm Karen. I'm half of the show, and my husband has been on before too. You can find me on Twitter at Say That Again. That is in DAT. You can find my husband on Twitter at Rodimus Prime. You can find our Twitter hashtag at TBGWT.
Yes.
Did you notice she said half the show?
She did say half the show.
I'm not half the show.
You will discuss that.
I could be like what's like a quintile percentage like below half.
We'll discuss it later. Anyways, thank you so much, Karen, for coming on the show.
Yes,
we just
thank
so
you.
Appreciate it. So great to always be able to talk with you.
Yes.
And have you here. And of course, everybody definitely go and listen to Karen and Rod's show. It's amazing. It's like the most consistent content that I interact with every single week.
Yeah, we work from home, and so we're together in our office, and we'll just listen to the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't say constantly, but
every day we listen
to it. Yeah. And yeah. It's become a, I don't know. It's just, it's weird. I meant to talk to you about this, but it's such a comfortable part of our life that I feel like sometimes we feel, you know, just like you do with not celebrities, but people you watch on TV and cinema and other ways. There's a level of pseudo familiarity.
Mm.
Like I'd almost like, oh man, I'd like, you know, Rod or Karen, this, like, but I don't really know them. You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like I do, I listen to the show a lot, but I don't like know them.
Right. Well, I saw some rumblings in the group about a TBGWT cruise or a TBGWT weekend.
Yeah, I'm pissed we missed the meetup. Was it in New York?
It was in DC, I think.
Oh man.
Next yeah, because a lot of people are like starting to spread out and have like local ones in their own areas, and that was the first one that happened. I'm pretty sure there'll be more to come.
That's exciting. And the like you said, you guys have really cultivated the most amazing fans, and I'm glad to be counted as one of them, and it's just a great community that you've built. And of course the content you guys put out is stellar, top notch across the board. And so thank you for being here and being with us again. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. We have we're back with our Fear the Walking Dead recap show with Black Rob next week as the show's back on. And next week Leonard Brothers makes his debut appearance here on the Interracial John, so we're excited to have him on from the Look and Listen podcast. Yeah, I mean, he's so funny. I'm excited to have him on. And you can find me on Twitter, Leslie Mack, MAC, and you can find that dude at Very White Guy. And I think that's it, dude.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.